big and small, go round and round, and round once more. Best go get your rest, Score drawled. Or are you already on the hunt for one of your diversions? When there was no answer, he frowned at the reply hidden within the lack of response. You have a purpose above and beyond what passed our fighting hours previously. The human dead are of far less concern than the living enemy of ours. I. Read, nay. Do not tarry in other pursuits, to the disadvantage of our goals. Have I ever let you down? There is still time, old friend. Score stared at the male from beneath half-masted lids. There is always time for your bleeding heart nature to get you into trouble. And lest you disagree, may I remind you of the circumstances you have found yourself in for the last 2 centuries. Throw stiffened. No, you need not. I am perfectly aware of where I am. Good. Score nodded. That is rather important in this life. Carry on. Throw bowed. I bid you good sleep, my Leodire. Score watched the male depart, and as he found himself alone once again, the burning in his body annoyed him. Sexual need was such a waste of time, for it neither killed nor nourished. But on a regular basis, his cock and balls needed something other than a rough tugging session. When darkness fell this coming night, Throw was going to have one other thing to procure for the band of bastards, and this time, Score was going to be forced to have his fill of it. And they were going to need blood as well, preferably not human. But if they had to make do for now, well, they'd just have to get rid of the bodies, wouldn't they? Chapter 34. Back in the training center, Manny woke up on the hospital bed, not in the chair. After a momentary confusion, hazy memories brought it all back. After the butler had shown up with the food, Manny had eaten in the office, as Jane had told him to do, and that, as opposed to inside his car, was where he'd found his cell phone, wallet, keys, and briefcase. The little collection of Manello Mentos had been right out in full view, just sitting on a chair, and the lack of security surprised him, given how locked down everything else was. Except then he'd turned his cell phone on and found that the SIM card was gone. And he'd been willing to bet that he'd need an atomic bomb to get in or out of the garage without their permission, so his keys were immaterial. Briefcase? Nothing but a power bar and some paperwork that had absolutely nothing to do with underground facilities, vampires, or pain. Guess all the why bother explained the out in the open. He'd been ready to throw in the proverbial towel when it came to checking his voicemail, but then he'd taken a flyer and reached for the AT&T office phone at his elbow. Picking up the receiver, he'd hit 9. And the dial tone had been a total shocker. Although, really, what were the chances that anyone would be left unattended down here? Slim to none. Except on a day when 90% of them had been injured fighting, and the other 10% were worried about their brothers. In short order, Manny had run through 3 voicemail systems: home, cell, and office. The first 2 had had messages from his mother. Nothing specific. House repairs were needed, and she'd bogeyed the dreaded 9th hole. The cell had had one from the vet that he'd had to listen to 2. And the office had been just as depressing as the glory shit. There had been 7 messages from colleagues around the country, and it was all so shatteringly normal. They wanted him to fly out and do consults or give papers at conferences, or make spaces in his residency program for their kids or family friends. The sad truth was, those run-of-the-mill requests lagged behind where his life was really at. Kind of like he'd hung a tight Louie and faked out the poor bastards who were calling him. And he had no idea. Once these vampires worked on his brain again, whether there would be anything left to count to 10 with, much less to use to operate on a patient or run a surgical department. There was no way of knowing what condition he was going to be in when he came out of all this. The sound of a toilet flushing had him bolting upright. As the bathroom door opened, he saw Payne's silhouette spotlit from behind, heard Johnny disappearing into nothing more than a filmy sheet. Sweet baby Jesus. His morning hard-on started to pound, and didn't that make him wish he'd slept in the damn chair? Trouble was, when he'd finally come back to her, he hadn't had the strength to say no when she'd asked him to join her. "You wake," she said in a husky voice. "And you are up." He smiled a little. "How are the legs feeling?" "Weak, but they work." She glanced over her shoulder. "I should like a shower." Shit, with the way that trailed off, she was looking for some help. And his mind went straight to the pair of them, separated by nothing but soap. "I think there's a bench to sit on." He got up on the far side of the bed so that he could tuck his erection into the waistband of the scrubs. Going over to her, he tried to give her as much room as possible as he ducked into the bath. "Yeah, right here." He reached in and turned on the water, then angled the bench around. "I'll set this up." Glancing over his shoulder, he froze solid. Payne had loosened the ties of her hospital gown and was slowly, inexorably, letting the front fall from her shoulders. As the spray hit his arm and started soaking the top of his scrubs, he swallowed hard and found himself wanting to scream when her hands caught the very top and held it to her breasts. She stayed like that, as if she were waiting to see what he was going to say, and as their eyes locked, his cock strained so hard, it was a wonder it didn't bust open the front of his frickin' pants. "Let it go, Bambina," he heard himself say. And she did. Fucking hell. He'd never wanted to worship the law of gravity before, but he did now. He wanted to prostrate himself at Newton's altar and weep with gratitude for the blessing that made all things fall to the goddamned ground. "Look at you," he growled, watching those pink tips get tight. Without conscious thought or any warning, his wet arm reached out and grabbed her, pulling her to his mouth, holding her hard as he sucked her nipple in and tongued her. But he didn't need to worry he'd offended her. Payne's hands dove into his hair and she cradled him against her as he suckled on her, bending her back until he was holding her upright and she was all naked female ready to be devoured. Maneuvering her around, he canned the light and took them both under the warm spray of the shower. As her body illuminated from within, he sank onto his knees, catching with his tongue the hot water that sluiced between her breasts and ran down her stomach. As she threw her hand out to catch her balance, he was on it, guiding her down so that she was safely sitting on the bench. Arching up, he palmed her nape and kissed her deep as he went for the soap and got ready to make sure she was very, very clean. As her tongue met his own, he was so into the feel of her nipples brushing against his chest and her lips against his own that he didn't notice or care that his hair was plastering onto his skull, or that the scrubs had saran wrapped on him, clinging to his body. "Healer," she gasped as he started soaping her skin. Her upper body grew slick and hot as his palms went all over her, from her neck to the tops of her hip bones. And then he started in on her legs, working her delicate feet and ankles and moving ever upward, over her calves and the backs of her knees. Water was all around them, falling between them, washing her off as soon as he sudsed her up, and the sound of it falling on the tile was drowned out only by her moans. Shit was only going to get louder, too. Sucking on her neck, he spread her knees wider and wider, pushing himself between them. "I told you," he bit her a little, You would like bath time. In response, her hands speared into his shoulders, her nails digging in and making him wonder if it wasn't time to start thinking about baseball stats, zip codes, car prices. Eleanor Roosevelt. You were correct, healer, she said, panting. I love it, but you are too well clothed. Manny closed his eyes as he shuddered, and then he got enough control over himself so he could speak. Now, I'm good the way I am. You just lean back and let me take care of this. Before she could respond, he sealed his mouth on hers and pushed her against the wall with his chest. To get her to stay away from the subject of his getting naked, he slid both hands up the insides of her thighs and ran his fingertips across her sex. As he felt how wet she was, and it was the kind of wet that had nothing to do with water and everything to do with what he wanted all over his tongue, he pulled back a little and looked down. Fucking hell, she was so ready for him. And man, what she looked like, all bent back, the water making her breasts glisten, her lips parted and a little bruised from him kissing her, her legs spread apart. Will you take me now? She moaned, her eyes flashing, her fangs elongating. Yes. He gripped her knees and went down, putting his mouth where his eyes had locked. As she cried out, he went for it hard and fast, engulfing her sex, driving her hard, making no excuses for how much he wanted her. When she blew apart, his tongue went into her and he felt it all, the pulses, the way she jerked against his chin and nose, the hard grip of her hands on his head. No reason to stop there. With her, he had endless stamina, and he knew, as long as his scrubs stayed on him, he could keep going like this with her forever. Vicious woke up in a bed that was not his own, but it didn't take him more than a nanosecond to know where he was. The clinic, in one of the recovery rooms. After giving his eyes a good rub, he glanced around. The light was on in the bathroom and its door was cracked, so there was plenty to see by. And the first thing that stood out was the duffel bag across the way on the floor. It was one of his. Specifically the one he'd given Jane. She wasn't here, however. Not in this room, at least. As he sat up, he felt as if he'd been in a car accident. Aches and pains blooming all over his body, like he was an antenna, and every single radio signal in the world was channeling into his nervous system. With a groan, he shifted around so that his legs dangled off the bed, and then he had to take a little breather. A couple of minutes later, it was a case of push and pray. He shoved his weight off the mattress and hoped. Bingo. Legs held. The side that had been worked on by Manello was not exactly ready to run a marathon, but as V ripped off the bandages and did some flexing, he had to be impressed. The scars from the knee surgery were almost completely healed already, nothing except a pale pink line left behind. But more importantly, what was underneath was straight-up magic. The joint felt fantastic. Even with the stiffness that remained, he could tell it was functioning perfectly. Hip felt good as new, too. Goddamn human surgeon was a miracle worker. On his way to the loo, his eyes passed over that duffel bag. Memories from his morphine trip filtered back and were far clearer than the actual experience had been. God, Jane was a spectacular doctor. In the night-to-night running of life, he hadn't so much forgotten that as not experienced it in a while. She always went that extra mile with her patients. Always. And she didn't treat his brothers so well because they were tied to him. It had nothing to do with his ass. Those people were hers in those moments. She would have treated civilians, members of the Glymera, even humans in exactly the same way. Inside the bathroom, he got into the shower. And man, it was crowded in the stall. As he thought about Jane and his sister, He had a terrible feeling he'd oversimplified what he'd walked in on the night before yesterday. He hadn't stopped to consider that there was some other relationship at work between the two females. It had been all about him and his sister. Nothing about the doctor-patient bond. Scratch that. It had been all about him. Nothing about pain and what she wanted out of her life, or what Jane had done or not done for her patient. Standing with his head down and the water hitting the back of his neck, he stared at the drain between his feet. He wasn't good with apologies or talking, but he was not a pussy either. 10 minutes later, he threw on a hospital Johnny and limped out into the corridor for the office. If his Jane was down here, he figured she'd be asleep at the desk, given how many of the recovery beds were no doubt filled with brothers she'd treated. He still had no clue what to say to her about the leathers, but he could at least give it a shot about pain. Except the office was empty. Sitting down at the computer, it took him less than 15 seconds to find his Shellen. When he'd hardwired the security system for the mansion, the pit, and this facility, he'd put cameras in every single room there was, except for the first family suite. Naturally, the equipment could be disconnected easily with an unplug, and what do you know? The bedrooms of his brothers all showed black on the computer screen, which was a good thing. He didn't need to see all that banging. The blue toile guest room up at the big house, however, was still being monitored, and in the light of the bedside lamp that had been left on, he saw the curled figure of his mate. Jane was dead to the world, but it was damn clear she wasn't resting comfortably. Her brows were clenched as if her brain were desperately trying to hold on to the sleep she was getting. Or maybe she was dreaming of things that prickled instead of pleasured her. His first instinct was to march right over there, but the more he thought about it, the more he realized that the kindest thing he could do was leave her where she lay and let her rest. She and Manello had gone for hours straight, all morning long. Besides, he was staying in tonight. Rath had taken everyone off rotation in light of all the injuries. Christ, that lessening society, he hadn't seen so many slayers in years. And he wasn't thinking about just the dozen that had shown up last night. Over the previous 2 weeks, he was willing to bet the Omega had turned 100 of those fuckers, and he had a feeling they were like cockroaches. For everyone you saw, there were another 10 that you didn't. Good thing the brothers were lethal as fuck, and Butch healed relatively easily after doing his destroyer business. Hell, Vicious had even been able to take care of the cop after the operation. Not that he remembered much about doing it, but still. Stifled by so much, he patted his pockets for his rolling paper and tobacco, and realized he was wearing a Johnny. No merch for a smoke. Out of the chair, back in the hall, heading down to where he'd crashed. The door to Payne's room was closed, and he didn't hesitate before he opened the way in. Chances were good that the human surgeon was in there with her, but there was no way the guy wasn't out like a light. He'd worked his ass off. As Vicious stepped inside, the scent in the air probably should have registered more clearly. And he maybe should have paid a little more attention to the fact that the shower was running. But he was just so shocked to see the bed was empty, and that there were braces and crutches over in the corner. Patient was paralyzed? You needed a wheelchair, not equipment that aided mobility, so was she walking? Pain? He raised his voice. Pain? The response he got back was a moan, a very deep, satisfied moan, which was not the kind of thing evoked even by the best shower anyone ever had. V shot across and nearly broke the door down as he burst into the hot, humid bathroom. And holy shit, the scene before him was so much worse than he'd thought. The irony, however, was that what they were... Oh, God. He couldn't even put into words what was doing. Saved the surgeon's life. V was so horrified, he had to look away. And the ostrich routine kept him from tearing a hole the size of a sewer pipe in Manello's neck. As Vicious stumbled back out, he heard all kinds of scrambling from the bath, and then it was a case of him going asswipe AWOL. He slammed into the bed, rebounded, knocked over a chair, bounced into a wall. At this rate, he'd find his way out in a week or so. Vicious. As pain came up to him, he kept his eyes on the floor and ended up with a clear shot of his twin's bare feet. So she'd regained feeling in her legs. Yay. Please spare me an explanation, he bit out before glaring over at Manello. The bastard was soaking wet, hair slicked to his head, scrubs sucked into his body. And do not get used to her. You're here only until I don't need you anymore, and given how well she's doing, it ain't for much longer. How dare you? It is for me to choose with whom I mate. He shook his head at his sister. Then pick someone other than a human half your size and a quarter your strength. Life down here is not what it's like in the clouds, sweetheart. And the lessening societies slapped a bullseye on your chest, just like the rest of us wear. He's weak. He's a security risk, and he needs to go back where he belongs and stay there. Well, didn't that make his twin furious? Her icy eyes went nuclear, her black brows slamming down. Get out. Ask him what he did all day long, V demanded. Wait, I'll tell you. He sewed me and the Brotherhood up because we were trying to defend our females and our race. That human? He's a lesser waiting to happen, in my opinion. Nothing less, nothing more. How dare you? You know not of him. V leaned into her. And neither do you, which is my fucking point. Before shit got really out of control, he spun around to leave, only to catch sight of them all in the mirror on the wall. What a fucking tableau they were. His sister, naked and unashamed. The human, wet and grim. Himself, wild-eyed and ready to kill something. Rage built up so fast and so high, it broke free before he even recognized the emotion. Vicious took two steps over, reared back his head, and slammed his face into the glass, shattering the reflection to fuck and gone. As his sister screamed and the surgeon shouted, he left them to their own devices and stalked off. Out in the hall, he knew precisely where he was going. Out in the tunnel, he was oh so very aware of what he was about to do. As he went, the blood dripped down his cheeks and off his chin, the red tears falling onto his chest and his abs. He didn't feel any pain at all. But with any luck, he would. Very soon. Chapter 35. By the time Payne got herself dressed and went out into the hall, her twin was gone. The blood on the floor told her in which direction he had headed, however, and she followed the trail down the corridor and into the glass-enclosed space marked Office. Inside, the little specks of red cut a path around the desk and disappeared through a door. So she went over and opened up. Just a closet. Nothing but supplies of papers and writing instruments. There was more to it, however. There had to be. The track of droplets terminated at a wall of shelving. Padding around, she searched for a lever or release to shift the casing over, all the while replaying the scene of the mirror smashing. She had such fear, not for herself, but for Vicious, and what she had driven him to. Again. She had wanted a relationship with her brother. Not like this, though. Never this toxic interplay. You getting anywhere? She looked over her shoulder at her healer. Standing in the doorway to the office, he was still wet, but no longer dripping, and had a white towel wrapped around his neck. His short, dark hair was askew, as if he had rubbed it dry and left it as it stood. I cannot find the way through. And wasn't that apt on so many levels? Payne wasted some time just staring at the neatly lined-up stacks of yellow pads and boxes of pens and orderly rows of things the purposes of which she could only guess at. When she finally gave up and stepped out, her healer was still in the doorway to the office, still staring at her. His eyes were black with emotion, his lips thin, and for some reason his expression made her realize how fully clothed he was. How fully clothed he had always been whenever he had lain with her. He hadn't let her touch him, had he? "You agree with my brother," she said darkly. "Do you not?" It was not a question, and she was not surprised when he nodded. "This isn't a long-term thing," he said with horrible gentleness. "Not for you. So that is why I have not had the pleasure of your sex." His brows flared briefly, as if her candor discomforted him. "Payne, this can't work between us."
"Says who?"
"It is our choice whom we—" "I've got a life to go back to." As her breath grew tight, she thought, how incredibly arrogant of her. It had never occurred to her that he had somewhere else to go. Then again, just as her brother had pointed out, how much did she know of him? "I've got a family," he continued, "a job, a horse I have to go see." Payne walked over to him, approaching him with her head high. "Why do you assume it is an either-or? And before you try, do not waste words telling me you do not want me. I know it is true. Your scent does not lie." He cleared his throat. "Sex isn't everything, Payne. And when it comes to you and me, even that's just about getting you to where you are now." At that, another chill ran through her, sure as if there were a draft in the room. But then she shook her head. "You wanted me, healer. When you came back here and saw me in that bed, your scent was nothing about the condition I was in, and you are a coward if you pretend otherwise. Hide if you will, healer." "My name is Manny," he snapped. "Manuel Manello. I was brought here to help you, and in case you haven't noticed, you're on your feet." "So I have. Right now, I'm just waiting until you people rip into my brain again and leave me strapped to separate night from day and dreams from reality. This is your world, not mine. And there is only either or." Their eyes locked together, and in that moment, if the facility had been on fire, she would not have been able to look away. And neither, she realized, would he. "If it could work," she said roughly, "if you were allowed to come and go as you pleased, would you stay with me?" "Payne, my question is clear. Answer it. Now." As his brows rose, she could not tell whether he was excited or repulsed by her brashness, and she did not care in that moment. "The truth is what it is, spoken or not, so we might as well have it all out." He slowly shook his head. "Your brother doesn't think—" "Fuck my brother," she countered. "Tell me what you think." In the strained silence that followed, she realized what she had just said, and wanted to curse anew. Dropping her head, she stared at the floor, not in meekness, but out of frustration. Females of worth did not use words like that, and they did not pressure people for a tea towel, much less something like this. Indeed, a proper female would stand by as the eldest male of her family handled the big decisions in her life, shaping the course of everything from where she lived to unto whom she was betrothed. Outbursts, sex, swearing. Any more of this and she was going to make Vicious's wishes come true, because her healer, Manuel that was, would find her so unattractive he would beg to be taken away from her with no memories of their time together. Would she never fit the Layla standard of feminine perfection? Rubbing her temples, she muttered, You are both right. Just for the wrong reasons. You and I could never last, because I am not a good match for any male. What? Tired of everything, of him and her brother, of herself, of females and males in general, she waved him off and turned away. You say this is my world. You have that so very wrong. I do not belong here any more than you do. What the hell are you talking about? Verily, he might as well get the true picture of things on his way out. What the hell? She stared over her shoulder. I am the daughter of a god, Manuel. A deity. That glow you call forth in me, it is her very essence as an entity. That is what she is. As for my father, he was nothing but a sadistic bastard who imparted unto me the urge to kill. That was his gift. And do you want to know what I did with it? Do you? She was aware that her voice was rising, but was singularly disinclined to quiet herself. I killed him, Manuel, and for that crime against mine bloodline, for that offense against the standards of behavior for females, I was imprisoned and held for centuries. So you are too right. Go and do it now. It is for the best. But do not think that I fit in here any better than you do. With another curse, she pushed past him and strode out into the corridor, figuring Manuel would find himself freed very shortly. It was your brother, wasn't it? The calm, low words echoed down the barren hallway, stopping not just her feet, but her heart. I saw the condition he's in, Manuel said in a deep voice. Any chance your father did that to the guy? Pain slowly turned back around. Standing in the middle of the corridor, her healer was showing neither shock nor horror, just an intelligence she was coming to expect from him. Why would you think that? She said in a dead tone. When I operated on him, I saw the scars, and it's pretty clear someone tried to castrate him. Extrapolating? From my limited interaction with him, I'd say he's way too touchy and aggressive for anyone to get the better of him. So it was either a gang of people, or somebody who got him when he was really, profoundly vulnerable. I'm thinking the latter is more likely because, well, let's just say I'd be surprised if abusive parents didn't happen for your kind, too. Pain swallowed hard, and it was a long, long while before she could find her voice. Our father had him held down. A blacksmith was ordered to tattoo him, and then get a pair of pliers. Manuel squeezed his eyes shut briefly. I'm sorry. I'm really damned sorry. Our father was chosen as a sire for his aggression and ruthlessness, and my brother was given over to him when he was very young. Whereas I stayed up at the sanctuary with our mammon, with naught to pass my time. I watched what transpired down here on Earth in the seeing bowls, and over the course of years in the war camp, my brother was abused. I brought this to my mother time and time again, but she insisted upon adhering to the deal she had made with the blood letter. She curled her hands into fists. That male, that forsaken, sadistic male. He was not capable of siring sons, but she guaranteed him one so he would agree to mate with her. 3 years after we were born, she relinquished Vicious unto our father's cruelty, whilst she did her best to force me into a mold I would ne'er fit into. And then that last episode where Vicious was... Tears speared into her eyes. No more. Not any longer could I do nothing. I came down here and I hunted the bloodletter down. I held him to the ground whilst I burned him into ash, and I do not regret it. Who put you in jail? My mother. but the imprisonment was only partially because he was dead. Sometimes I believe it was more her colossal disappointment in me. She wiped her face quickly and rubbed the wetness away. But enough of this. Enough of all of it. Go now. I shall speak to the king and send you off. Goodbye, Manuel. Rather than waiting for him to respond, she headed off once more. Yes, I want you. Payne stopped, and then looked over her shoulder again. After a moment, she said, "You are a fine healer, and you have done your job. As you so aptly pointed out, we have no further cause to speak." When she resumed walking, his footsteps approached fast, and he caught her, wheeling her around. "If I didn't keep my pants on, I couldn't have kept myself out of you." "Really? Give me your hand." Without looking, she held one unto him. "Why ever for?" He moved fast, putting her palm between his legs and pressing her into the hot, hard length at his hips. "You're right." He moved against her, his pelvis undulating, the arousal pushing against her palm as he started to breathe deeply. Even as I tried to tell myself otherwise, I knew that if I got naked, you were going to stay a virgin only long enough for me to get you on your back. Not romantic, but really, totally fucking true. As her lips parted, his eyes dropped to her mouth and he growled. "You can feel the truth, can't you? It's in your goddamned hand." "Do you not care about what I did? You mean with your father?" He stopped the rubbing and frowned. "No. To be clear, I'm a Lex Talionis kind of guy. Your brother could easily have died from those wounds. I don't care how fast you people heal. But more to the point, I'm willing to bet that father-son bonding moment fucked his head up for the rest of his life. So yeah, I don't have a problem with what you did." Retaliatory justice, she thought, as his words sank in. Tightening her hold on him, she resumed what he had stopped, tracing up and down his sex, stroking. "I am glad you feel this way." And wasn't that true on a lot of levels? His erection was delicious, so hard and blunt at the top. She wanted to explore him as he had her, with her fingers, her mouth, her tongue. Manuel's eyes briefly rolled back into his head as he gritted his teeth. "But your brother's still right." "Is he?" She leaned in and licked at his lips. "Are you sure?" When she drew back, there was a sizzling moment as their eyes met, and then, with a growl, he spun her around and pushed her into the wall. "Be careful," he growled. "Why?" She dipped her lips to his neck and slowly, inexorably, dragged one fang up over his jugular. "Oh, fuck." With a desperate curse, he locked his hand on hers, holding her palm in place, at his hips, obviously trying to refocus. "Listen to me. As good as this is between us." He swallowed hard. "As good? Shit. Look, your brother knows what's doing. I can't take care of you properly, and I can take care of myself." She pressed her mouth to his, and she knew she had him when his pelvis began to push forward and ease back again. He may have halted her hand, but his body was more than making up the slack on the friction front. "Fucking hell," he groaned. "Do you want me to come right here?" "Yes, I do. I want to know what it is like." More kissing, and even though he was the one gripping her and pinning her against the wall, she was the aggressor. Manuel pulled back, but only, it seemed, upon a great struggle within himself. After taking a number of deep breaths, he said, You asked me whether I would stay if I could. In a heartbeat. You are beautiful and sexy, and I don't know what the hell your mother or anyone else is doing comparing you to anything or anybody. Nothing comes close to you, on any level. As he spoke, he was lethally serious and abidingly sincere, and the acceptance he offered was as generous as it was unique. She had never gotten it from anyone. Even her own brother wanted to deny her her choice of mate. "Thank you," she whispered. "It's not a compliment. That's just the way it is." Manuel kissed her mouth softly and lingered with the contact. "But the goateed hater is still right, Payne."
"Goateed hater?"
"Sorry. Little nickname I dreamed up for your twin." He shrugged. "But even still, I really think he does have your best interests at heart. And you do need someone other than me long term. Whether I can stay here or not is just part of the problem."
"Not in my eyes."
"Then you need to see more clearly. I'm going to be dead in another 4 decades, if I'm lucky. Do you really want to watch me age? Die?" She had to close her eyes and turn her head away at the thought of him passing away.
"Fates, no."
In the quiet that followed, the energy between them changed, shifting from everything sexual to a different kind of yearning. And as if he felt as she did, he tucked her in against his body, holding her tightly within his strong arms. "If there's one thing that I've learned as a doctor," he said, "it's that biology prevails. You and I can do all the deciding we want, but the biological differences are nothing that we can change. My life expectancy is a fraction of yours. At most, we'd get a 10-year window before I'm in Cialis land."
"What's that?"
"A very, very flat, gelded place," he said dryly.
"Well, I would go there with you, Manuel."
She pulled back so she could look into his beautiful brown eyes.
"Wherever it is."
There was a beat of silence, and then he smiled sadly. "I love the way you say my name." Sighing, she put her head on his shoulder.
"And I love saying it."
As they stood there, one against the other, she wondered whether it was for the very last time. And that made her think of her brother. She was worried about Vicious and needed to talk with him, but he had chosen to leave her with no way of finding him. So be it. Difficult as it was, she would let Vicious go temporarily for now and focus on the male who was with her.
"I have something to ask of you," she said to her healer.
"Manuel," she corrected herself. "Name it."
"Take me into your world. Show me, if not everything, then something."
Manuel stiffened. "I don't know if that's such a hot idea. You've been on your feet for just over 12 hours at this point."
"But I feel strong, and I have ways of dealing with travel."
Worst came to worst, she could just dematerialize back here to the compound. She knew from the seeing bowls that her brother had surrounded this facility with mists, and that was a beacon she could readily find.
"Trust me, I shall be in no danger."
"How would we get out together, though?" Payne stepped from his hold. "You redress your body whilst I take care of everything." When it looked like he was going to argue, she shook her head. "You say biology always wins. Fine. But I say to you, we have this night. Why should we waste it?"
"More time together is only going to make it harder to leave."
Oh, how that hurt.
"You said you would grant me a favor. I have put it upon you. Is your word not your bond?"
His lips thinned out, but then he inclined his head.
"Fair enough. I'll go change."
As he headed back to their room,
She returned to the office and picked up the phone, as Jane and Elena had shown her how to do. The dialing went well enough, and the butler Doggan answered in a cheery voice. This had to work, she told herself. This absolutely had to work. In the old language, she said, "This is Payne, blooded sister of the Black Dagger brother Vicious, son of the bloodletter. I should wish to speak with the king, if he would grant me the courtesy." Chapter 36. As Vicious burst into the pit from the underground tunnel, he had to wipe his bloody face with his palm so he could keep going down to the bedrooms. He supposed it was a good thing that the mirror had mostly bullseyed, because it meant there were few shards in him. But in truth, he didn't really give a shit. When he came up to Butch and Marissa's door, he knocked. Hard. "Give me a minute." Butch didn't take that long to open up, and he was still pulling his robe on when he did. "What is—" That was as far as he got. Jesus Christ! V! Over the guy's shoulder, Marissa sat up in their bed. Her cheeks flushed, her long blonde hair tangled, the covers pulled up to her breasts and held there. Drowsy satisfaction was quickly replaced with shock. "I should have just called." V was impressed at the calm tone of his voice, and he tasted copper as he spoke. "But I don't know where my phone is." As his stare locked onto his best friend's, he felt like a diabetic desperate for insulin. Or maybe it was more like a heroin addict pining for a needle. Whatever the metaphor, he had to get out of himself, or he was going to lose his mind and do something criminally stupid. Like get his blades on and turn that surgeon into so much hamburger meat. "I caught them together," he heard himself say. "But don't worry, the human is still breathing." And then he just stood there, the question that he'd come to ask as plain as the blood on his face. Butch glanced back at his Shellen. Without hesitation, she nodded, her eyes sad and kind and so understanding that V was momentarily touched, even in his numbed-out state. "Go," she said. "Take care of him. I love you." Butch nodded at her, probably mouthed an "I love you" back. Then he looked at V and muttered gruffly, "You go wait in the courtyard. I'll bring the escalator round. And get a towel from the bathroom, would you? You look like Freddy frickin' Krueger." As the cop peeled off for the closet and ditched his robe to get dressed, V looked at the male's Shellen. "It's all right, Vicious," she said. "It's going to be all right." "I do not crave this." But he needed it before he became a danger to himself and others. "I know, and I love you too." "You are a blessing beyond measure," he pronounced in the old language. And then he bowed to her and turned away. When the world came back into focus some time later, V found himself sitting on the passenger side of the Escalade. Butch was behind the wheel, and the pedal-metal routine the cop was pulling meant some serious mileage had been covered. The lights of downtown Caldwell were not just in the distance. They were all around, glimmering through the front and side windows. The silence in the SUV was as tense as a dagger hand, and as dense as a brick. And even as they closed in on their destination, V had trouble comprehending this trip they were taking. There was no going back, however. Not for either of them. Down into the Commodore's parking garage. Engine off. Two doors opening, two doors closing, and then the ride up in the elevator, which was like the trip from the compound to the Commodore. Nothing that stuck in V's mind. Next thing he knew, Butch was using the copper key to open the way into the penthouse. V walked in first, and he willed the black candles on their stanchions to light up. The instant the black walls and flooring were illuminated, he went from zombie to live wire, his senses coming alive to the point where his own footfalls sounded like bombs dropping. And the sound of the door shutting them both in was like the building falling in on itself. Every breath he took was a gust of wind. Every beat of his heart was a boxer's punch. Every swallow he took was a guzzle down his throat. Was this how his subs had felt? This too-alive tingle? He stopped by his table. No jacket to take off. Nothing but the now bloody hospital Johnny on his back. Behind him, Butch's presence loomed big as a mountain. "Can I use your phone?" V asked roughly. "Here." V spun around and caught the tossed BlackBerry with his gloved hand. Calling up a blank text, he chose Doc Jane out of the address book. His fingers stilled at that point. His brain was clogged with emotion, the screams he needed to let out getting in the way and turning his normal reserve into a solid steel set of bars that bolted him inside of himself. But then, this was why they were here. With a soft curse, he canceled the empty text. When he went to pass the phone back, Butch was over by the bed, taking off one of his many fancy-dancy leather jackets. No biker spiky bullshit for the cop's downtime. The coat was hip-length and had been fitted perfectly to his barrel chest, the material beyond butter and into cloud soft, which V knew because he'd handed the thing over a number of times. This was not something the guy fought in, and he was taking it off for the right reasons. No reason to get blood on the likes of that. As V put the phone down on the bed and backed away, Butch folded the jacket with careful, precise hands, and when he laid the leather down, it was as if he were settling a young on the black duvet. Then those strong, blunt fingers of his pulled up his belted black slacks and smoothed his black silk shirt. Silence. And not the comfy kind. Vicious looked to the banks of plate glass that ran around the penthouse and stared at his best friend's reflection. After a moment, the cop's head turned. Their eyes met in the glass. "Are you going to leave that on?" Butch asked darkly. Vicious reached up to the tie at the back of his neck and popped the bow that held the two halves of the Johnny together, and then he did the same at his waist. As the shift fell from his body, the cop watched from across the room as it hit the floor. "I need a fucking drink," Butch said. Over at the bar, the guy poured himself a shot of Lagavulin, and another. And then he pushed the squat glass away, picked up the bottle, and sucked hard. Vicious stayed where he was, his mouth open, his breath shooting in and out of him as he remained focused on the image of his best friend. Butch put the bottle down, but held on to it, his head falling forward as if he'd closed his eyes. "You don't have to do this," V said hoarsely. "Yeah, I do." The cop's dark head lifted and then he pivoted. When he finally came forward, he left the booze at the bar, and he stopped when he was behind Vicious. He was close, close enough so that the heat from his body easily registered. Or maybe that was V's own blood beginning to boil. "What are the rules?" the cop said. "There are none." Vicious spread his stance and braced himself. "Do whatever you want. But you have to break me. You've got to tear me apart." Back at the compound, Manny changed into yet another set of scrubs. Things kept going like this, and he should buy stock in the goddamned garment company, or in laundry machines. Out in the hall, he took up res against the concrete wall and stared at his Nikes. He so did not think the soles should get excited. He had a feeling that he and Payne were not going anywhere. At least, not together. Daughter of a deity. And it didn't matter to him. She could have been the offspring of an ostrich, for all he cared. Rubbing his face, he couldn't decide whether he was impressed with himself or terrified that he was so accepting of that news flash. Probably healthier to be shocked and disbelieving and all about the hell no. His brain just rolled with it, though, which meant he was either getting really flexible with what he considered reality, or his gray matter had fallen into a state of learned helplessness. Probably the former, because all in all, he felt with it. Shit. He felt bigger than he had in ages. In spite of the fact that he'd operated for 10 hours straight, and he'd slept in a chair for part of the night, or day, or whatever time it was, the body-mind combo of his was strong and healthy and sharp as a tack. Even as he stretched, there was no stiffness, or creaks or pops. It was as if he'd been on vacation for a month, getting massages and doing yoga in front of the ocean. Not that he'd ever done the downward dog. And on that note, a truly fabulous, utterly filthy image of pain came to mind. As his cock raised its hand to be called on, he thought it would no doubt be a good idea not to take her on a guided tour of, say, his bedroom. Actually, given recent events, which had involved him on his knees, his bathroom was probably off-limits, too. Maybe he should avoid rooms with tile. So his kitchen was a no-go. His front hall, too. Payne all but jumped out from the office, and she had his briefcase and other things with her. We're free. With all the grace of an athlete, she ran to him, her hair flowing out behind her, her stride just as fluid as those dark waves on her head. We're free! We're free! As she leaped into his arms, he caught her and spun her around. They're letting us go? He said. Indeed. We have clearance to take your automobile out from here. As she handed him his things, she smiled so widely her fangs flashed. I thought you might need these. And the phone works now. How did you know they're mine? They carried your scent. And Rath told me about the card thingy that my twin removed. Phone Schmoan. The fact that she recognized him by smell turned him on, reminding him of exactly how close they had gotten. Okay, time to stop that film reel. She put her hand up to his face. You know what? What? I like the way you look at me, Manuel. Oh, yeah? It makes me think of when your mouth was upon me. Manny groaned and nearly lost it. So to keep things from getting out of hand, he put his arm around her waist. Come on, let's take off before we lose the chance. Her laugh was so carefree that for some reason it split his chest wide and exposed the beating heart behind his ribs. And that was before she leaned in and kissed his cheek. You are aroused. He glanced over at her, and you are playing with fire. I like being hot. Manny barked out a laugh. Well, don't you worry. You are just that. When they came up to the fire door, he put his palm on the push bar. This really going to open? Try it and find out. He tilted in, and what do you know? The latch sprang free, and the heavy metal panel went wide. As vampires with guns and machetes didn't come streaming down on them from every direction, he shook his head. How in hell did you manage this? The king was not happy, but I am not a prisoner here. I am of age, and there is no reason I should not be able to leave the compound. And at the end of the evening, what then? As her joy diminished, he thought, that was how she'd pulled it off. Technically, she was escorting him home. This was their goodbye. He smoothed her hair back. It's okay. It's all right, Bambina. She seemed to swallow hard. I shall not think of the future, and neither should you. There are hours and hours to be had. Hours, not days or weeks or months or years. Hours. God, he didn't feel free at all. "Come on," he said, stepping out and taking her hand. "Let's make this count." His car was parked in the shadows on the right, and when he got over to it, he found the thing unlocked. But come on, like anyone was going to get at it? He opened the passenger side door. "Let me help you in." Taking her arm like a gentleman, he settled her and then stretched the seatbelt across her breasts, clicking it into place. As her eyes bounced around the interior and her hands stroked the sides of the bucket seat, he figured this could be her first car ride. And how cool was that? "You ever been in one of these before?" he asked. "Verily, I have not." "Well, I'll take it slow." She caught his hand as he straightened. "Does this go fast?" He laughed a little. "It's a Porsche. Fast is what it does." "Then you shall take us upon the wind. It shall be as my days astride were." Manny took a mental snapshot of the wild happiness on her face. She was glowing, and not in the ethereal sense, but in the simple joy of life way. He leaned in and kissed her. "You are so beautiful." She captured his face. "And I thank you for it." Oh, but it so wasn't him. What was lighting her up was freedom and health and optimism, and she deserved nothing less out of life. "I have someone I want you to meet," he blurted. Payne smiled at him. "Then drive on, Manuel. Take us into the night." After a moment more of staring at her, he did just that. Chapter 37. Standing naked in his penthouse, Vicious waited for something. Anything. Instead, Butch backed off and disappeared into the kitchen. As he was left to his lonesome, V closed his eyes and cursed. This was a bad idea. You didn't ask a good Catholic boy to play with the kinds of toys V... The hit came from behind, fast and sure. It was a modified body slam and executed beautifully. Two huge arms wrapped him at the chest and the hips, and he was slung around and spun out into the far wall by the work table, which was when the slam part came in. Every square inch of him made impact. No bounce back, though. No ricocheting. He was pinned in place by the nape and the ass. "Arms over your head." That growl was like a gun to the back of his skull, and V struggled to comply, fighting against the pressure that trapped both his arms in front of his chest. The right side came free first, and the instant his wrist was out from under, it was grabbed and forced into a cuff. Left side happened just as fast. Then again, cops were good with the steel. There was a brief release where he was able to catch some air, and then the sound of metal chain links being churned through a gear announced where things were headed. Up. Gradually, his weight shifted off his feet and onto the sockets and lengths of his arms. The ascent stopped right before his toes left the floor completely, and then he just hung there, facing toward the windows, breath squeezing in and out of his lungs as he heard Butch moving behind him. "Open your mouth." At the command, V cranked his jaw wide, the jaw at his cheekbone cracking, his eyes pulling down at the corners, his facial cuts coming alive with a chorus of howls. The gag was pulled down over his head, and it fit right where it should, the ball squeezing between his fangs and forcing shit open even farther. With a quick jerk, the leather strapping tightened across the back of his skull, and the buckle was fastened until it dug into his scalp. It was a perfect setup. The suspension and the choking confinement did their job, spurring on his adrenaline, making his body strain in so many different ways. A barbed corset was next, the contraption not going over his shoulders but around his torso. the metal points on the inside of the leather bindings sinking into his skin. Butch started with the strap right across the sternum, and then it was a case of sequential squeeze. Down, down, down. Until from V's ribcage to his stomach, to the tops of his hips, concentric circles of bright white pain tingled into his spine, shooting north to the receptors in his brain and south into his rock-hard cock. Oxygen whistled through his nostrils as there was a brief calm of no touch, and then Butch was back with four lengths of rubber strapping. For an amateur, he had great instincts. Both the ball gag and the chest harness had stainless steel rings that hung inch by every inch, and clearly, the cop was going to put them to good use. Working steadily, Butch slipped hooks through the gag's fixtures and stretched the tubing down, attaching it on the front and the back of the corset, which effectively locked Vicious's head into the forward position. Then Butch gave him a swing and sent him on a little merry-go-round. In his frozen state, it was a mind-fuck and a half, and it didn't take long before he wasn't sure whether he was moving or the room was on the ride. Things passed by one after the other. The bar, the door out, the work table, Butch, the bed, the glass, then it was back to the bar, the door, the table, and Butch, who had walked over to the hanging whips and chains. The cop just stood there, his eyes locked on Vicious. Like a train pulling into a station, the rotation grew slower and slower until it stopped altogether, with the pair of them facing each other. "You said no rules," Butch gritted out. "You still mean that?" With no way to nod or shake his head, V did what he could with his feet, moving them up and back on the floor. "Are you sure?" When he repeated the motion, Butch's eyes glittered in the candlelight, as if there were tears in them. "Okay, then," he said hoarsely, "if that's the way it's going to be." Butch wiped his face, turned to the wall, and then walked down the lineup of toys. As he approached the whips, V imagined the spiked fringe cutting into his back and his thighs, but the cop kept going. Next were the cat nines, and V could just feel them lashing his flesh. But Butch didn't stop. Then it was the nipple clips and the barbed stainless steel cuffs that would be applied to ankles, forearms, the throat. When each section was passed, Vicious frowned, wondering if the cop was just being a tease, and how unimpressive was that. Butch did stop, however, and his hand reached out. V moaned and began to thrash against the binds that held him aloft. Eyes peeling wide, he did what he could to beg, but there was no moving his head and no way to speak. "You said no limits," Butch choked out. "So this is how we're going to do it." V's legs spasmed, and his chest started to scream for lack of oxygen. The mask the cop had chosen had no holes in it, not for the eyes or ears or mouth. Made of leather and stitched together with thin stainless steel thread, the only way oxygen got in was via two mesh side panels that were far enough back so that there was no leaching of light. And the air would be circulated across hot, panicked skin before it went through the mouth and down into the lungs. The contraption was something V had bought but had never used. He'd kept it only because it had terrified him, and that was reason enough to own the thing. To be robbed of sight and hearing was the one thing guaranteed to make him lose his fucking shit, which was precisely why Butch picked the mask. He knew too well the buttons to push. Physical pain was one thing, but the psychological stuff was so much worse, and therefore more effectual. Butch walked slowly around and out of sight. With furious paddling, V tried to get himself repositioned to face the guy, but his toes couldn't quite manage good purchase on the floor, which was another success of the cop's strategy. To fight and squirm and get nowhere just heightened the terror. On a oner, it was lights out. Jerking uncontrollably, Vicious tried to fight, but it was a battle he was going to lose. With a quick yank, the mask went tight around his neck, secure and going nowhere. Mental hypoxia set in immediately. There was no oxygen to be had, none coming through, nothing. He felt something on his leg, something long and thin, and cold, like a blade. He went utterly still, to the point where his previous exertions swung him back and forth on the chains above him, his body a statue suspended by twin strings of metal. V's inhales and exhales inside the hood were a roar in his ears as he zeroed in on the sensation below his waist. The knife traveled slowly, inexorably upward, and as it went, it moved to the inside of his thigh. In its wake, a liquid trail welled and eased down over his knee. He didn't even feel the pain of the cutting as that blade headed for his sex. The implications were that much of a sucker punch to his destruct button. In a flash, past and present mixed. The alchemy, ignited by the adrenaline, pumping through every vein he had. He was instantly ripped back through the many years, to the night when his father's males had held him down in the dirt at the bloodletter's command. The tattoos had not been the worst of it. And here it was, happening again, just not with the pliers. Vicious screamed around the ball gag, and kept at it. He screamed for all he had lost, screamed for the half-male he was, screamed for Jane, screamed for who his parents were and what he wished for his sister, screamed for what he had forced his best friend to do. He screamed and screamed until there was no breath, no consciousness, no nothing. No past or present. Not even himself anymore. And in the midst of the chaos, in the strangest way, he became free. Butch knew the moment his best friend fainted. It wasn't just that those dangling feet went still. It was the sudden relaxation of all that musculature. No more straining in those huge arms and massive thighs. No more pumping of that big chest. No more ripped cords in the shoulders or down the back. Butch immediately took the spoon he'd gotten from the kitchen off V's leg, and likewise stopped pouring the lukewarm water out of the glass he'd grabbed from the bar. The tears in his eyes didn't help him loosen the hood and pull it free, nor did they make removing the immobilizer setup simple, and he struggled with the ball gag especially. The corset was a bitch and a half to get loose, but however desperate he was to get V down, it was vastly easier to take everything off when he had a 360 to work with. And soon enough, the brother was bloody but unencumbered. Over at the wall, Butch released the winch and slowly lowered Vicious's tremendous, inanimate body down. There were no signs that the change in altitude registered, and the floor made an impact only so far as it collapsed V's loose legs. Those knees bending up as the marble rose to greet his butt and torso. There was more blood when Butch released the cuffs. God. His friend was a mess. The gag straps had left red welts on his cheeks. The corset's damage was even more pervasive, and then there were the wrists that were torn ragged. And that was in addition to the condition the guy's face was in, courtesy of whatever he'd slammed the thing into. For a moment, all he could do was brush V's jet-black hair back with hands that looked like he had palsy. Then he looked down his friend's body, to the ink below the waist, and the flaccid sex, and the scars. The bloodletter was a shit beyond measure for torturing his son as he'd done, and the scribe virgin was a useless planker to have let it happen. And it had killed Butch to use that horrible past to crack his friend wide. Except he hadn't wanted to beat V physically. He wasn't a pussy. But he did not have the stomach for that. Besides, the mind was the most powerful weapon anyone had against themselves. Still, tears had been rolling as he'd taken the spoon and put it against the inside of that leg, because he'd known instantly the extrapolation that would be made. And he'd been well aware that the lukewarm water would really cement the dislocation from the present. The screaming had been muffled by the gag and the hood, and yet the no sound had pierced Butch's ears as nothing else could. It was going to be a long, long while before he got over this. Every time he closed his eyes, all he could see was his best friend's body jerking and spasming. Scrubbing his face, Butch got up and went to the bathroom. From off the shelf in the closet, he grabbed a stack of black towels. Some he left dry, others he wet with warm water at the sink. Back beside Vicious on the floor, he wiped off the blood and fear sweat from his best friend's body, rolling him from side to side so there was nothing missed. The cleanup took a good half an hour, and several trips back and forth to the sink. The session had lasted a fraction of that. When he was finished, he gathered V's tremendous weight in his arms and carried the guy to the bed, laying him out with his head against the black satin pillows. The sponge bath, such as it had been, had left V's skin with a rash of goosebumps, so Butch tacoed the brother, untucking the sheets and rolling them up and over him. The healing was already happening, the flesh that had been scraped or cut re-knitting and erasing the marks that had been made. This was good. As he stepped back, part of Butch wanted to get on the bed and hold on to his friend. But he hadn't done this for himself. And besides, if he didn't get out of here and get drunk fast, he was going to lose his motherfucking mind. When he was sure V was settled, he grabbed his jacket, which he'd had to shove off onto the floor. Wait. The bloody towels and the mess under the hanging unit. Moving quickly, he swiped over the floor and then grabbed the load of damp and weighty and took it into the hamper in the bathroom. Which made him wonder who the hell did the housekeeping here. Maybe it was Fritz. Or maybe V did the Merry Maid's routine himself. Back in the main room, he took a second to double-check that all the evidence was gone except for the glass and the spoon, and then he went over to see if V was still asleep, or in that semi-coma. Stone cold out. "I'm getting you what you really need," Butch said softly, wondering if he was ever going to breathe right again. His chest seemed as constricted as V's had just been in reality. "Hold tight, my man." On his way to the door, he got out his cell phone to dial, and dropped the damn thing. Huh. Looked like his hands were still shaking. Go fig. When he eventually hit send, he prayed that the call would be... "It's done," he said roughly. "Come over here." "No, trust me. He's going to need you. This was for the two of you." "No." "Yeah. No, I'm leaving now." "Good. Okay." After he hung up, he locked V in and called for the elevator. As he waited, he tried to put his coat on and fumbled with the suede so badly he gave up and slung it over his shoulder. When the doors dinged and opened, he stepped inside, hit the button that had a P on it, and went down, 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 falling in a controlled, seamless way, thanks to the little metal box of the elevator. He texted his Shellen instead of calling her for two reasons. He didn't trust his voice, and in truth, he wasn't ready to answer the questions she would inevitably and fairly have. "All okay. Am going home to rest. I love you. XXXB." Marissa's response was so fast, it was pretty clear she'd had her phone in her hand and been waiting to hear from him. "I love you too. Am at safe place but can come home?" The elevator opened and the sweet smell of gasoline told him he'd reached his destination. As he went over to the Escalade, he texted back, "No, really am fine. You stay and work. I'll be there when you're done." He was taking out his keys as his phone went off. "Okay, but if you need me, you are the most important thing." God, she was such a female of worth. "Right back at you. XXX," he typed out. Canning the SUV's alarm and unlocking the driver's side, he got in, shut the door, and relocked. He was supposed to get driving. Instead, he put his forehead down on the steering wheel and took a deep breath. Having a good memory was an overrated skill set. And as much as he didn't envy Manello and all the erasing, he would have given almost anything to get rid of the pictures in his head. Not V, though. Not that relationship. He would never give the mail up. Ever. Chapter 38. "Here. Thought you might like some coffee." As Jose de la Cruz put the Starbucks venti latte on the desk of his partner, he parked his ass in the seat across the way from the guy. Vec should have looked like roadkill, considering he was in the same clothes he'd had on when he'd Mission Impossible'd that car hood the night before. Instead, the SOB somehow managed to seem rugged instead of ratty. So Jose was willing to bet the 6 other cups of half-drunk Java around the computer had been brought by various ladies in the department. "Thanks, men," as Vec palmed up the newest offering of hot and steamy. His eyes didn't budge from the Dell monitor. Fair guess that he was searching the missing persons files and pulling out women aged 17 to 30. "What you doing?" Jose asked anyway. "Missing persons." Vec stretched in his chair. "Have you noticed how many 18 to 24s have been listed recently? Men, not women." "Yep. The mayor's pulling together a task force. There are plenty of girls as well, but Christ, there's an epidemic going on." Out in the hall, a pair of unis walked by and both he and Vec nodded to the officers. After the footsteps faded, Vec cleared his throat. "What did Internal Affairs say?" "Not a question, and those dark blues stayed locked on the database. That's why you've come, right?" "Well, and also to deliver the coffee. Looks like you were taken care of, though." "Reception, downstairs." "Ah, yes. The two Kathys. Brittany, spelled B-R-I-T-N-A-E, and Teresa. They probably all thought the guy was a hero." Jose cleared his throat. "Turns out the photographer already has some harassment charges pending against him because he's got a habit of showing up in places he's not welcome. He and his lawyer just want to make it all go away, because another trespassing into a crime scene thing is so not going to go well for him. IA has taken statements from everyone, and bottom line, it's a simple assault on your part. Nothing aggravated. Plus, the photog says he'll refuse to cooperate with the DA against you if it comes to that. Likely because he thinks that it'll help him." Now those peepers shifted over. "Thank God. Don't get too excited." Vec's eyes narrowed, but not in confusion. He knew exactly what the hitch was. And yet he didn't ask. He just waited. Jose glanced around. At 10 o'clock in the evening, the homicide department's office was empty. Although the phones were still ringing, little chirping noises springing up here and there until the voicemail ate the callers. Out in the hall, the housekeeping staff was all about the rug suck, the whirring of multiple vacuums coming from far down the way, by the CSI lab. So there was no reason not to talk straight. Jose shut the main door anyway. Back with Vec, he sat down again and picked up a stray paperclip, drawing a little invisible picture with it on the desk's fake wood top. "They asked me what I thought about you." He tapped his temple with the clip. "Mentally, as in how tight you are." "And you said..." Jose just shrugged and stayed quiet. "That motherfucker was taking pictures of a corpse. For profit." Jose held up his palm to cut the protest off. "You'll get no argument there. Fuck it. We all wanted to beat him. The question is, though, if I hadn't stopped you, how far would it have gone, Vec?" That got another frown from the guy. And then shit got real quiet. Dead quiet. Well, except for the phones. "I know you've read my file," Vec said. "Yep." "Yeah, well, I am not my father." The words were spoken on a low and slow. "I didn't even grow up with the guy. I barely knew him, and I'm nothing like him." File that one under. Sometimes you luck out. Thomas Del Vecchio had a lot of things going for him. He'd gotten straight A's in his criminal justice major, top of his class at the police academy. His 3 years on patrol were spotless, and he was so good-looking he never bought his own coffee. But he was the son of a monster. And this was the root of the problem they had. By all that was right and proper, it was not fair to lay the sins of the father around the neck of the son. And Vec was right. On his own psych assessments, he'd come up as normal as anyone else. So Jose had taken him on as a partner without a second thought about that pops of his. That had changed since last night, and the issue was that expression that had been on Vec's face when he'd gone for that photog. So cold, so calm, with no more affect than if he'd been popping the top off a soda can. Having worked in homicide almost all of his adult life, Jose had seen a lot of murderers. You had your crime of passion types who lost it over a guy or a woman. You had the stupid-ass department, which in his mind covered drug and alcohol-related as well as gang violence. And then you had the sadistic sickos who needed to be put down like rabid dogs. All of these variations on the theme caused unimaginable tragedy for their victims' families and the community, but they weren't the ones who kept Jose up at night. Vec's dad had murdered 28 people in 17 years, and those were only the bodies that had been found. The bastard was on death row right now, a mere 125 miles away in Somers, Connecticut, and he was about to get the injection, in spite of the number of appeals his lawyer had filed. But what was really fucked up? Thomas Del Vecchio Sr. had a fan club that was worldwide, with 100,000 friends on Facebook, merchandise on Cafe Press, and songs that had been written about him by death metal bands. He was an infamous celebrity. Fucking hell. As God was his witness. All that shit made Jose mental. Those idiots who idolized the fucker should come work his job for a week. See how cool they thought killers were in real life. As things went, he'd never met Del Vecchio, the elder, in person, but he'd seen plenty of video from various DA and police department interviews. On the surface, the guy was straight up lucid and as calm as a yoga instructor. Pleasant, too. No matter who was in front of him or what was said to inflame him, he never wavered, never broke, never gave an indication that any of it mattered. Except Jose had seen the tell in his face, and so had a few of the other professionals. Every once in a while, he'd get a twinkle in his eye that made Jose reach for his cross. It was the kind of thing a 16-year-old boy might have when he saw a cherry ride drive by, or an apple-bottomed girl with a belly shirt. It was like sunlight glinting off of a sharp blade, a brief flash of light and delight. That was all he'd ever given away, however. The evidence had convicted him, never his testimony. And that was the kind of murderer who left Jose staring at the ceiling while his wife slept beside him. Del Vecchio Sr. was smart enough to stay in control and cover his tracks. He was self-reliant and resourceful. And he was as relentless as the change of seasons. He was Halloween in a parallel universe. Instead of a normal Joe with a mask on, he was a fiend behind a friendly, handsome face. Vec looked just like his dad. "Did you hear what I said?" At the sound of the kid's voice, Jose refocused. "Yeah, I did." "So is this it for you and me?" Vec said sharply. "You saying you don't want to work with me anymore? Assuming I still have a job?" Jose went back to his paperclip sketching. "Internal Affairs is going to give you a warning." "Really?" "I told them your head was where it needed to be," Jose said after a moment. Vec cleared his throat. "Thanks, man." Jose kept moving the clip around, the little scratching noise so very loud. The pressure in this job is a killer. At this, he looked Vec right in the eye. "It is not going to get easier." There was a pause, then his partner murmured, "You don't believe what you told them, do you?" Jose shrugged. "Time will tell." "Why the hell did you save my job, then?" "I guess I feel that you should have a chance to right your wrongs, even if they're not really yours." What Jose kept to himself was that it wasn't the first time he'd taken on a partner who had things to work out on the job, so to speak. "Yeah. And look at how Butch O'Neill had turned out. Missing. Presumed dead. In spite of whatever Jose had thought he'd heard on that 911 tape." "I am not my father, detective. I swear to you. Just because I was being professional when I hit the guy." Jose leaned forward, his eyes boring into the kid's. "How did you know that was what bothered me about the attack? How did you know the calm was the thing?" As Vec blanched, Jose eased back again. After a bit, he shook his head. "It doesn't mean you're a killer, son. And just because you fear something doesn't mean it's true. But I think you and I need to be real clear with each other. Like I said, I don't think it's fair for you to be held to a different standard because of your pops. But if you have another outburst like that over anything, and I mean parking tickets," he nodded toward the Starbucks mug, "bad coffee, too much starch in your shirt, the goddamn photocopier, it's game over. Do we understand each other? I'm not going to let someone dangerous wear a badge. Or a gun." Abruptly, Vec went back to staring at his monitor. On it was the face of a pretty blonde 19-year-old who had disappeared about 2 weeks prior. No body yet, but Jose was willing to bet she was dead by now. After nodding, Vec picked up the coffee and sat back into his chair. "Deal." Jose exhaled and put the paper clip where it belonged, in the little clear box with the magnetic rim. "Good. Because we've got to find this guy before he takes anyone else." Chapter 39. Traveling south on the Northway, as Manuel called it, Payne's eyes were starved for the world around her. Everything was a source of fascination, from the streaming lines of traffic on either side of the road, to the vast black heavens above, to the bracing night chill that rushed into the car's cockpit every time she opened her window, which was about every 5 minutes. She just loved the change in temperature, warm to cool, It was so totally unlike the sanctuary, where everything was monoclimatic. Plus, there was the great blast of air that blew into her face and tangled her hair and made her laugh. And then, of course, every time she did it, she looked over at Manuel and found that he was smiling. "You haven't asked where we're going," he said, after her most recent shutting. In truth, it did not matter. She was with him, and they were free and alone, and that was more than enough. "You scrub him. At the end of the night, you scrub him and come back here. Alone." Pain kept her wince to herself. Wrath, son of Wrath, had the kind of voice that went with the likes of thrones and crowns and black daggers hung about the chest. And the royal tone, 'twas not window dressing. He expected to be obeyed. And Pain was under no misapprehension that just because she was the scribe virgin's daughter, somehow she was not subject to his rule. As long as she was down here, this was his world, and she was in it. Whilst the king had uttered those awful words, she had squeezed her eyes shut, and upon the silence that had reigned thereafter, promptly realized that she and Manuel would be going nowhere unless she avowed. And so she had. "Would you like to know how? Hello? Pain?" With a start, she forced a smile to her face. "I would prefer to be surprised." Now he grinned deeply. "Even more fun. Well, as I said, I want to introduce you to someone." His smile faded a little. "I think you might like her." "Her? As in a female? Like?" Verily, that would happen only if the she in question had a horse face and a big butt, Pain thought. "How lovely," she said. "Here's our exit." There was a soft click, 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 and then Manuel turned the wheel and threw them off the larger road onto a declining ramp. As they stopped in a line of other vehicles, she saw off on the far, far horizon a huge city, the likes of which her eyes struggled to comprehend. Great buildings, marked with an incalculable number of pinhole lights, rose up from a ground cover of smaller structures, and it was not a static place. Red and white lights snaked in and around its edges. No doubt, hundreds of cars on roads similar to the one they had just traveled upon. "You're looking at New York City," Manny said. "It's beautiful." He laughed a little. "Parts of it certainly are. And darkness and distance are great makeup artists." Pain reached out and touched the clear glass window in front of her. "Where I tarried in the above, there were no long vistas, no grandeur, nothing but the oppressive milky sky and the choking boundary of forest. This is all so wondrous." A harsh sound rang out behind them, and then another. Manny glared into the small mirror overhead. "Relax, buddy, I'm going." As he accelerated, quickly losing the distance to the next car ahead, she felt badly that she had distracted him. "I am sorry," she murmured. "I do not mean to go on. You can talk forever, and I'll listen quite happily." Well, wasn't that good to know? "I am not unfamiliar with some of the things I witness here, but for the most part this is all a revelation. The seeing bowls we have on the other side offer but snapshots of what transpires upon the earth, focusing on people, not objects, unless such an inanimate is part of someone's fate. Indeed, we are provided only destiny, not progress. Life, not landscape. This is everything I wanted to become free for." "How did you get out?" "Which time?" she thought. "Well, in the first instance, I realized that when my mother granted audiences to people from down below, there was a small window whereby the barrier between the two worlds was a kind of mesh. I discovered that I could move my molecules through the tiny spaces that were created, and that was how I did it. The past drew her in, memories flaring to life and burning not just in her mind, but her soul. My mother was furious and came forth unto me, demanding that I return to the sanctuary, and I told her no. I was on a mission, and not even she could derail me. Pain shook her head. After I did what I had to, I thought I would just live my life, but there were things I did not anticipate. Down here, I need to feed, and there are other concerns. Her kneading, specifically, although she wasn't going to explain the way her fertile time had hit and crippled her. It had been such a shock. Up above, the scribe virgins' females were ready to conceive nearly all of the time, and thus the great swings of hormones did not o'ertake their bodies. Once they came down below, however, and spent more than a day or so thus, the cycle came upon them. Thank fate it was only once a decade. Although Payne had wrongly assumed she'd have 10 years until she had to worry about it. Unfortunately, it had turned out that that was 10 years after the cycle first initiated itself. Her kneading had started up no more than a month after she'd been out of the sanctuary. As she remembered the great pains to mate that had left her defenseless and desperate, she focused on Manuel's face. Would he service her in her time of needing? Take care of her violent cravings and ease her with the release of his sex? Could a human even do that? But you ended up back there again, he said. She cleared her throat. Yes, I did. I had some difficulty, and my mother came unto me anew. Verily, the scribe virgin had been terrified that rutting males would set upon her only daughter, who had already ruined so much of the life that she had been given. She told me that she would aid me, although only on the other side. I agreed to go with her, thinking that it would be as before, and I could once again find the way out. That was not what transpired, however. Manny's hand covered her own. You're out of all that now, though. Was she? The blind king was seeking to rule her destiny just as her mother had. His reasons were less selfish, granted. After all, he had the Brotherhood and their Shellens and a young living under his roof, and that was a lot worthy of protecting. Except she feared her brother's view of humans was shared by Wrath. Namely, that they were but lessers waiting to be called into service. You know what? She said. What? I think I could stay in this automobile with you forever. Funny. I feel the exact same way. More click, click, clicking, and then they took a right. As they went along, there were fewer cars and more buildings. And she saw what he meant about night improving a city's visage. There was no grandeur to be had in this neighborhood. Broken windows were blackened out like missing teeth, and the grime that faded down the flanks of the warehouses and stores were age lines. Pockmarks made by rot or accident or vandalism marred what once had no doubt been smooth facades, and bright, fresh paint jobs had faded. The bloom of youth, long lost to the elements and to time's passage. And indeed, the humans who were propped up in the shadows were in no better condition, wearing wrinkled clothes and the colors of pavement and asphalt. They appeared to be weighted down from above, as if an invisible bar had forced them all to their knees and was going to keep them there. Don't worry, Manuel said. The doors are locked. I am not afraid. I am saddened for some reason. Urban poverty will do that to you. They went by yet another rotting, barely roofed box attended by two humans sharing a single coat. She never thought she would find any value in the sanctuary's oppressive perfection. But mayhap her mother had created the haven to protect the chosen against sights like this. Lives like those. The environs soon improved slightly, however. And shortly thereafter, Manuel pulled off the road into a lot that ran parallel to a sprawling, new facility that appeared to cover a great plot of land. All around, lights on towering, craned arms cast peachy illumination upon the low-slung building and the shiny tops of the two vehicles that were parked and the clipped shrubs that bordered the walkways. "Here we are," he said, stopping their ride and turning to her. "I'm going to introduce you as a colleague, okay? Just roll with it." She grinned. "I shall endeavor to do that." They got out together and, oh, the air! Such a complex bouquet of good and bad, of metallic and sweet, of dirty and divine. "I love this," she said. "I love this." She put her arms out and swung herself in a circle, pivoting on a foot that had been booted just prior to their leaving the compound. As she halted her spin and her arms came to rest at her sides, she found him staring at her and had to laugh in embarrassment. "I am sorry. I..." "Come here," he growled, his eyelids dropping low, his stare hot and possessive. Instantly, her sex was aroused, her body flushing, and somehow she knew to take her time as she approached him, knew to draw it out and make him wait, even if it wasn't for long. "You want me?" she drawled when they were face to face. "Yeah. Hell yeah." His hands grabbed her waist and pulled her in tight. "Give me your mouth." As she did just that, she wrapped her arms around his neck and melded into his solid body. The kiss had ownership all over it, on both sides, and when it ended, she could not stop smiling. "I like it when you demand of me," she said. "It takes me back to the shower when you were..." He let out a groan and cut her off, putting his hand gently over her mouth. "Yeah, I remember. Trust me, I remember." Payne gave his palm a lick. "You will do that to me again. Tonight. I should be so lucky." "You shall be. And so shall I." He laughed a little. "You know what? I'm going to need to put one of my coats on." Manuel reopened his door and leaned into the car. When he reemerged, he drew on a pressed white jacket that had his name in cursive by the lapel, and she knew by the way he closed the two halves that he was trying to cover up his body's response to her. Pity. She liked to see him in that condition, all proud and hard. "Come on, let's go inside," he said, taking her hand. And then, under his breath, he seemed to add, "Before I come inside." As he didn't finish the sentence, Payne left her smile right where it was, front and center on her face. Upon closer examination, the facility seemed to be fortified for a siege, with discreet bars on its windows and a tall fencing stretching far down into the distance. The doors they approached were also barred, and Manuel didn't test their handles. Logical to secure the building, she thought, given what the greater part of town had looked like. Manuel pushed a button, and immediately a tinny little voice said, "Tri-County Equine Hospital. Dr. Manuel Manello." He turned his head toward a camera. "I'm here to see..." "Hey, Doc! Come right in." There was a buzz, and then Manuel held the door open for her. "After you, Bambina." The interior they walked into was sparse and very clean, with a smooth stone floor and rows of seating, as if people spent much time tarrying in this front room. On the walls, pictures of horses and cattle were framed, many of the animals with ribbons of red and blue hanging from their halters. Over across the way, there was a glass panel with the word "Reception" embossed upon it in formal gold letters, and there were doors. So many doors. Those with a male symbol and a female symbol. Those with signs such as "Veterinary Director." and finance and staff manager. Whatever is this place? She asked. A lifesaver. Come on, we go this way. He pushed their way through a pair of double doors and went over to a uniformed human male who was seated behind a desk. Hey, Dr. Manello. The man put down a newspaper that had New York Post in big letters across the top. We haven't seen you for a little bit. This is a colleague of mine, Pamela. We're just going to see my girl. The human man focused on Payne's face and then seemed to shake himself. She's where you left her. Doc spent a lot of time with her today. Yeah, he called. Manuel knocked the desktop with his knuckles. See you in a few. Sure thing, Doc. Nice to meet you. Pamela. Payne inclined her head. It is lovely to meet with you as well. There was an awkward silence as she straightened. The human man was absolutely struck by her, his mouth slightly parted, his eyes wide and very appreciative. Easy there, big guy, Manuel said darkly. You can resume blinking at any time. Like as in now? Really. Truly. Manuel put himself in between the two of them and took her hand at the same time, both blocking the view and establishing dominion over her. And that wasn't all. Dark spices wafted up from him. The scent, a warning to the other man that the female being admired was available only over Manuel's cold, dead body. And didn't that make her feel like there was a blazing sun in the center of her chest? Come on, Pamela. As Manuel tugged at her and the pair of them started walking, he added in a mutter, before John Boy's jaw drops off his face and lands on the sports section. Payne skipped once, and then did it again. Manuel looked over. That poor guard back there almost has a near-death experience with his badge being shoved down his throat, and you're happy? Payne kissed Manuel's cheek quickly, seeing behind the faux grim on his handsome face. You like me. Manuel rolled his eyes and pulled her over by the neck, returning the kiss. Duh. Duh, she mimicked. Someone tripped over someone's foot. Hard to say who it was, and Manuel was the one who caught them from falling. We'd better pay attention, her male said, before we're the ones who need resuscitating. She elbowed him. A wise extrapolation. Are you smacking my ass? Payne glanced over his shoulder and then slapped his butt hard. As he yelped, she winked at him. Indeed, verily, I am. Dropping her lids and her voice, she hammed. Would you like me to do it again, Manuel? Perhaps on the other side? As she joggled her eyebrows at him, the sound of his laughter broke out and filled the empty hallway, ringing far and wide. And when they bumped into each other again, he pulled her to a stop. Wait, we need to do this better. He tucked her under his arm, kissed her forehead, and lined himself up with her. On three, lead with the right. Ready? One, two, three. On cue, they both stretched out their long right legs, and then it was left and right and left. Perfectly in step. Side by side. They went down the corridor. Together. It had never dawned on Manny that his sexy vampire might have a sense of humor. And didn't that round out her package perfectly? Ah, hell, it wasn't just that. It was her wonder and her joy, and the sense that she was up for anything. She was absolutely nothing like those fragile, brittle socialites, or the pretzel-thin models he'd dated. Payne? Yes? If I told you I wanted to climb a mountain tonight. Oh, I would love to. I should love to see a long view from... Bingo. Although, God. He had to wonder at the cruelty of finally finding his perfect match in someone so fundamentally incompatible. When they came up to the second set of double doors that led into the clinical part of the hospital, he pushed one half wide and, without missing a beat, they turned sideways and shuffled through. And that was when it happened. That was when he fell completely in love with her. It was her happy chatter, and the bounce in her step, and the icy eyes that shone like crystal. It was the backstory she'd shared, and the dignity she showed, and the fact that she'd been judged against a standard he'd used to date, and now wouldn't be able to bear sitting across a dinner table from. It was the power in her body, and the sharpness of her mind, and... Christ, he hadn't even thought about the sex. Ironic. She'd given him the orgasms of his life, and they hadn't even made the top of his I love you because list. He guessed she was just that kind of spectacular. "Whatever are you smiling for, Manuel?" Payne said. "Perhaps anticipating some future instance of my hand upon your derriere?" "Yep, that's exactly it." He pulled her in for another kiss, and tried to ignore the pain in his chest. No need to spoil the time they had with the goodbye that was waiting for them. That was going to come soon enough. Besides, they'd nearly reached their destination. "She's over here," he said, hanging a left and pushing into the recovery stall area. The instant the door opened, Payne hesitated, a frown appearing as whinnies and the occasional hoof stamping broke through the hay-scented air. Farther down, Manny tugged at her hand. "Her name's Glory." Glory was the last one on the left, but the instant he said her name, her long, elegant neck stretched out, and her perfectly proportioned head emerged from the top of her stall. "Hey, girl," he said. In response, she let out a proper greeting, her pointed ears pricking, her muzzle pumping the air. "Merciful fate," Payne breathed, dropping his hand and going forward ahead of him. As she approached the stall, Glory tossed her head, her black mane flaring, and he had a sudden vision of Payne getting bitten. "Be careful," he said as he broke into a jog. "She doesn't like—" The instant Payne put her hand on that silken muzzle, Glory went right in for more, bumping against the palm, seeking a proper cuddle. "New people," Manny finished lamely. "Hello, darling one," Payne murmured, her eyes going over the horse as she leaned into the stall. "You are so beautiful, so big and strong." Pale hands found a black neck and stroked in a slow rhythm. "Why are her forelegs bandaged?" "She broke the right one, badly, about a week ago."
"May I go inside?"
God, he couldn't believe it, but Glory appeared to be in love, her eyes all but rolling back into her head as she got a good scratching behind the ears. "Yeah, I think it'll be okay." He sprang the latch on the door, and they both slipped in. And when Glory went to move back, she hobbled on what had been her good side. She'd lost so much weight that her ribs were showing like picket fence rails under her coat. And he was willing to bet when the newness of her visitors dimmed, her burst of energy would fade fast. The voicemail message from the doctor had been all too apt. She was failing. That broken bone was healing, but not nearly fast enough. And the redistribution of mass had caused the layers of opposite hoof to weaken and separate. Glory extended her muzzle into his chest and gave him a quick shove. "Hey, Curly."
"She is extraordinary."
Payne patted her way around the filly.
"Just extraordinary."
And now he had another thing on his conscience. Maybe bringing Payne here was not a gift, but a cruelty. Why introduce her to an animal who was likely going to be? God. He couldn't even think it. You are not the only one who is territorial, Payne said softly. Manny glanced around Glory's head. I'm sorry? When you told me I was to meet a female, I had hoped she was one with a horse face. He laughed and smoothed Glory's forehead. Well, she has that, all right. What are you going to do with her? As he tried to form the words, he gathered the mane that fell just above the filly's nearly black eyes. Your lack of reply is answer enough, Payne said sadly. I don't know why I brought you here. I mean, he cleared his throat. Actually, I know why, and it's pretty fucking pathetic. All I have is my job. Glory is the only thing that is not my job. This is personal for me. You must be broken-hearted. I am. Abruptly, Manny looked over the back of his failing horse to the dark-headed vampire who had laid her cheek against Glory's flank. I am. Absolutely destroyed at the loss. Chapter 40. Mere moments after Butch called her, Jane became solid on the terrace of V's penthouse. As her form took weight within its shape, the night air cold-fingered her hair and made her eyes water. Or, maybe that was just her tears. Looking in through the glass, she saw everything much too clearly. The table, the lashes, the whips, the other things. When she'd come here with Vicious before, those trappings of his hardcore predilections had seemed nothing more than a tantalizing and slightly frightening backdrop to the incredible sex they themselves had. But her version of play was poodle to his werewolf. And how clearly did she know that now? What had Butch used? What kind of shape was her mate in? Was there going to be a lot of blood? Wait a minute. Where was V? Passing through the sliding glass door, she... No blood on the floor? Or dripping from instruments? No suspension hooks hanging from the ceiling? Everything was exactly as it had been the last time she'd been here, as if nothing had happened. A groan came from outside the circle of candlelight, and the sound ripped her head around. Of course. The bed. As she pierced the veil of darkness, her eyes adjusted, and there he was, under a wrap of satin sheets, stretched out flat, writhing in pain. Or was it sleep? Vicious, she said softly. With a shout, he came instantly awake, his torso shooting upright, his lids popping wide. Immediately, she noticed that his face was marked by fading scars, and there were others across his pecs and abdomen as well. But the expression he wore was what really got to her. He was terrified. Abruptly, there was a furious flapping as he shoved the covers off his body. As he looked down at himself, sweat broke out across his chest and shoulders, his skin taking on a sudden gleam even in the shadows as he cupped his sex, like he was protecting what was left. Hanging his head, he drew great breaths. Inhale, exhale, inhale. Exhale. The pattern transformed into sobs. Curling into himself, his hands sheltering the butcher job that had been done long, long ago, he wept in great heaves of emotion, his reserve gone, his control gone, his intelligence no longer ruler of his realm, but a subject. He didn't even realize she was standing next to him. And she should leave, Jane thought. He wouldn't want her to see him this way. Not even before everything had fallen apart between them. The male she knew and loved and had mated wouldn't want any witness to this. It was hard to say what got his attention, and later she would wonder how he had picked that moment, just as she was going to dematerialize to look up at her. She was instantly incapacitated. If he had been pissed off about what had happened with Payne, he was going to hate her now. There was absolutely no going back from this invasion of privacy. Butch called me, she blurted. He thought you'd... He hurt me. My father hurt me. The words were so thin and soft that they nearly didn't register. But when they did, her heart just stopped. Why? Vicious asked. Why did he do it to me? Why did my mother? I never asked to be born to the pair of them, and I wouldn't have chosen to be if either had asked me. Why? His cheeks were slick with tears that spilled over his diamond eyes, a ceaseless flow he neither noticed nor appeared to care about. And she had a feeling it was going to be a while before the leaking stopped. An inner artery had been nicked, and this was the blood of his heart, spilling out of him, covering him. I'm so sorry, she croaked. I don't know any of the whys, but I know that you didn't deserve it, and it's not your fault. His hands uncupped himself and he stared downward. It was a long while before he spoke, and when he did, his words were slow and considered, and as ceaseless as his quiet tears. I wish I were whole. I wish I could have given you young if you'd wanted them and could conceive them. I wish I could have told you that it killed me when you thought I had been with anyone else. I wish I had spent the last year waking up every night and telling you I loved you. I wish I had mated you properly the evening you came back to me from the dead. I wish... Now his shimmering stare flipped up to hers. I wish I were half as strong as you are, and I wish I deserved you. And that's about it. Right. Okay. Now they were both tearing up. I'm so sorry about pain, she said hoarsely. I wanted to talk to you, but she'd made up her mind. I tried to work with her, I really did, but in the end I didn't want you to be the one to do it. I would have rather lived with the horrible truth on my conscience for an eternity than have you kill your sister, or have her hurt herself even more than she was. I know that now. And to be honest, the fact that she is healed, it gives me the cold sweats because of the near miss we had. It's all right, though. She's okay. Jane wiped her eyes. And I think when it comes to things about you and sex, I've always worried that I might not be quite enough for you. Fuck no. You're everything to me. Jane put her hand over her mouth so she didn't lose it completely, because it was exactly what she needed to hear. I never even got your name in my back, V said. I thought it was stupid and a waste of time. But how can you feel like we're mated without it? Especially when every single male at the compound has been marked for his shellin. God, she hadn't thought of that. V shook his head. You've given me space to hang with Butch and fight with my brothers and do my shit on the internet. What have I given you? My clinic, for one thing. I couldn't have built it without you. Not exactly a bouquet of roses. Don't underestimate your carpentry skills. He smiled at that, and then grew serious once again. Can I tell you something that I've thought every time I've woken up next to you? Please. Vicious, the one who always had an answer for everything, seemed to get tongue-tied. But then he said, You're the reason I get out of bed every night. And you're the reason I can't wait to come home every dawn. Not the war, not the brothers, not even Butch. It's you. Oh, such simple words. But the meaning, good Lord, the meaning. Will you let me hug you now? She said roughly. Her mate stretched out his massive arms. How about I hold you instead? As Jane leaped forward and dived into him, she countered, It doesn't have to be one or the other. Instantly, she became fully corporeal without any effort at all. That magical internal chemistry between them calling her into being and holding her there. And as Vicious buried his face in her hair and shuddered like he had run a vast distance and was finally home, She knew exactly how he felt. With his Schellen flush against him, V felt like he'd been blown wide open, and then stitched back together. God, what Butch had done for him? For them all. The route the cop had gone had been the right one. Horrific and terrible, but the absolute right one. And as V held his female now, his eyes searched the space where it had all gone down. Everything had been cleaned up, except for a pair of things that were out of place on the floor. A spoon and a glass that was mostly empty of what had to be water. It had all been an illusion. Nothing had in fact cut him open. And how'd you like to bet Butch had left those two things front and center so that when V woke up and looked over, he'd know the means that had taken him to his end? In retrospect, it seemed so fucking dumb. Not the session with the cop, but the fact that V never really thought about the bloodletter and those years in the war camp. The last time that piece of the past had come up at all had been when Jane had first been with him, and then it had only been because she'd seen him naked and he'd had to explain. My father didn't want me to reproduce. That was pretty much all he'd had to say. And afterward, like a dead body that had rolled over face up in still water, that shit had sunk down again, resettling on the sandy riverbed of the very core of him. BJ, or before Jane, he'd only ever had sex with his pants on. Not from shame, or at least that was what he'd told himself, but because he simply hadn't been interested in going there with the anonymous males and females he'd fucked. AJ, it had been different. Naked was more than cool, likely because Jane had kept a tight head at his revelation. And yet, as he thought about it now, he'd always held her at arm's length, even if she'd been in his arms. If anything, he'd been closer to Butch. But that was male to male, which was somehow less threatening than male to female. Shades of mommy issues, no doubt. After everything his mommin had pulled, he simply couldn't trust females like he could his brothers or his best friend. Except Jane had never betrayed him. In fact, she had been willing to battle her own conscience just to save him from the unspeakable act his twin had been demanding. "You are not my mother," he said into his Schellen's hair. "Damn right." Jane pulled back and looked him right in the eye, as was her way. "I never would have abandoned my son, or treated my daughter that way." V took a long inhale, and when he let the oxygen out of his lungs, he felt like he was expelling the myths by which he'd defined himself, and Jane, and their mating. He needed to change the paradigm. For them, for himself, for Butch. Christ, the expression on the cop's face when things had been going down here had been beyond tragic. So yeah, it was time to stop using outside shit to self-medicate his emotions. The extreme sex and the pain had seemed like excellent solutions for a long time, but in reality, they had been concealer over a pimple. The ugliness had stayed within him. What he had to do was deal with the inside crap so he didn't need Butch or anyone else to break him down just so he could let things out. That way, the kink could truly be only for pleasure with Jane. Check this shit out. Looked like he was finally prepared to try a psychiatric version of Proactive. Next thing he knew, he was going to be on TV, staring into a camera and saying, "All it takes is a little dab of self-awareness, and then I rinse with the patented defining yourself wash, and my mind and emotions are clean and glowing." Okay, now he was really losing his damn marbles. True. Stroking Jane's soft hair, he murmured, "About the things I have here. If you're game, I'm still going to want to play, if you know what I mean. But from now on, it's just for fun, and only for you and me." Hell, They'd had a shitload of good, leathered-up, freaky sex in this place, and he was always going to want that with her. Hopefully she'd feel the same. "I like what we do here," she smiled. "It turns me on." Well, didn't that get his cock pumping? Me too. As he smiled back at her, he recognized the one spanner in the mix. This turn-a-new-leaf resolution was all well and good, but how did he keep it going? Tomorrow evening he simply couldn't afford to wake up and be that guy who went off the rails anymore. Shit. He guessed he was going to find out how. Wasn't he? With a gentle hand, he brushed his Shellen's cheek. "I've never been in a relationship before you. I should have known that we'd hit a wall at some point." "That's the way it works." He thought of his brothers and the number of times there had been fallouts and fights and arguments among that bunch of meat-headed fighters. Somehow, they'd always worked it out. Usually by popping each other from time to time, which was a guy thing. Clearly, he and Jane were going to do the same. Not with the popping, of course, but with the bumpy roads and the eventual resolutions. After all, this was his life, not a fairy tale. "But you know what the best thing is?" his Jane asked, as she put her arms around his neck. "I don't feel like I died anymore because you're not in my life." "Well, yeah, that too." She craned up and kissed him. Two words. Make-up sex. "Oh, yeah. Except, wait, is that three words? Or did you hyphenate it?" "I had a hyphen in my head, but I think it goes both ways." "Or is it make-up one word?" "That's also a possibility." Pause. "Have I mentioned you are the hottest geek I've ever known?" "I resemble that remark." He dipped his head and brushed his mouth against hers. "Just keep it to yourself. I have a reputation as a hard ass to protect. Your secret is safe with me." V grew serious. "I'm safe with you." Jane touched his face. "I can't promise you we're not going to hit rough patches again, and I know we're not always going to agree. But of this I'm very sure. You will always be safe with me. Always." Vicious drew her close and tucked his head into her throat. He'd assumed there were no more levels to go after she'd died and then come back to him in her lovely ghostly form. But he was wrong. Love, he realized, was like the daggers he made in his forge. When you first got one, it was shiny and new, and the blade glinted bright in the light. Holding it against your palm, you were full of optimism for what it would be like in the field, and you couldn't wait to try it out. Except those first couple of nights out were usually awkward as you got used to it, and it got used to you. Over time, the steel lost its brand new gleam, and the hilt became stained, and maybe you nicked the shit out of the thing a couple of times. What you got in return, however, saved your life. Once the pair of you were well acquainted, it became such a part of you that it was an extension of your own arm. It protected you and gave you a means to protect your brothers. It provided you with the confidence and the power to face whatever came out of the night. And wherever you went, it stayed with you, right over your heart, always there when you needed it. You had to keep the blade up, however, and rewrap the hilt from time to time, and double-check the weight. Funny. All of that was, well, duh, when it came to weapons. Why hadn't it dawned on him that matings were the same? Rolling his eyes at himself, he thought, Christ, maybe Hallmark would be open to establishing a line of medieval-inspired Valentine's Day cards, some kind of Holly Goth Lightly kind of thing. He'd be freaking perfect for supplying content. Closing his eyes and holding his Jane, he was almost glad he'd lost his shit, just so they could get to this place. Well, He would have picked an easier route if there had been one. Except he wasn't sure it worked that way. You had to earn where they were now. "I have a question to ask you," he said softly. "Anything." Pulling back a little, he stroked her hair with his gloved hand, and it was a while before he asked what was on the tip of his tongue. "Will you let me make love to you?" As Jane stared at Vicious and felt his body against hers, she knew she was never letting him go. Ever. And she also knew that if they could make it through the past week, they had the staying power that good marriages, or matings, required. "Yes," she said. "Please." Her Helrin had come to her so many times since they'd been together. In the night and in the day. In the shower and in the bed. Clothed, unclothed, half-clothed. Fast and hard. Hard and fast. The edge in him had always been part of the excitement. That and the unpredictability. She never knew what to expect. Whether he was going to demand things of her, or take control of her body, or restrain himself so that she could do whatever she wanted to him. The constant, though, was that he was never one for going slow. Now, he just stroked her hair, running his fingers through the waves and tucking them behind her ears. And then he kept his eyes locked with hers as he brought their mouths together softly. Stroking and caressing, he licked at her lips. But when she opened, he didn't dive in as he always did. It was only more with the kissing, until she felt drugged by the sucks and drags of flesh on flesh. Her body usually roared for this. Now, though, a delicious unfurling washed through her, relaxing and easing her, bringing a peaceful arousal that was somehow just as profound and shattering as the desperate passion she typically felt. As he shifted position, she followed his lead, going fully onto her back as he reared up and covered her upper body with his. The kissing just kept going, and she was so into it that she didn't notice that he had slipped a hand under the bottom of her shirt. His warm palm lazied upward, honing in on her breasts, finding and capturing. No teasing, no pinching, no tweaks. Just a passing of his thumb back and forth across her nipple, until she arched up and moaned into his mouth. Her hands went to his sides and, oh God, there was that pattern of marks she'd seen, and they went all the way around his torso. Vicious took her wrists and moved her arms back down to the bed. "Don't think about it." "What did he do to you?"
"Shh."
The kissing resumed, and she was tempted to fight it, but the pulling strokes gently submerged her brain in sensation. It was over and done with, she told herself, and whatever had happened had helped them get here. That was all she needed to know. Vicious's voice drifted into her ear, deep, low. "I want to take your clothes off. May I?"
"Please."
"Yes. God, yes." Him undressing her was a part of the pleasure, the means as glorious as the end that brought them together skin to skin. And somehow, the gradual reveal of what he had seen so many times made it feel like it was new and special. Her breasts tightened even more as the cooler air hit them, and she watched his face as he looked at her. The need was there, except there was so much more. Reverence, gratitude, a vulnerability that she had sensed but never seen clearly before. "You are everything I need," he said as he dipped his head. His hands were everywhere, on her stomach, her hips, between her thighs, on her slick sex. The orgasm he gave her was a warm wave coursing through her body, radiating outward, taking her over in a blissful cloud of pleasure. And in the midst of it, He mounted her and slipped inside. No pounding, just more of the wave, inside her and outside, as his body moved and his erection pulled up and back. Nothing fast, only more of the slow love. No urgency, only all the time in the world. When he finally came, it was on a last curl of his spine and a pulsing in her core, and she went along with him. The two of them wrapped up tight, fusing, body and soul. With a roll, he brought her on top of him, and she lay draped across his hard, muscled chest, languid as a summer breeze and just about as weighty. She was floating and warm and... "Are you okay?" Vicious said as he looked up at her. "More than okay." She searched his face. "I feel like I've made love to you for the very first time." "Good." He kissed her. That was the plan. Laying her head down on his beating heart, she looked across at the wall behind his table. She'd never thought she'd be grateful for such a terrifying bunch of toys, but she was. Through the storm, they'd found the calm. Once apart, now they were one again. Chapter 41. Back at the mansion, Quinn was pacing around his bedroom like a rat looking for a way out of its cage. Of all the fucking nights for wrath to hold them penned in, fucking A. As he made yet another trip past the open door into the bath, he thought the fact that the quarantine made sense somehow pissed him off even more. Only he and John and Zex were not hurt at this point. Everyone else had been in that melee and gotten sliced, diced, or shaved in some way. It was Casa del Heel the fuck up around here. But come on, the three of them could have been out and about doing payback. Stopping in front of the terrace doors, he looked over the manicured gardens that were on the verge of getting their spring on. With the lights turned off in his room, he could clearly see the swimming pool with its winter cover stretched over its belly, like the biggest set of spanks the world had ever seen, and the trees that were still mostly bare, and the flower beds that were... Blay had been injured. Still nothing but orderly boxes of dark brown earth. Shit. Rubbing his now short hair, he tried to negotiate with the pressure at the center of his chest. According to John, Blay had been hit on the head and striped on the stomach. The former was being monitored. The latter had been stitched up by Doc Jane. Neither was life-threatening. It's all good. Too bad his sternum wasn't buying the hunky-dory. Ever since John Matthew had told him the news, this goddamn ache had set up shop, molling into him and going barkalounger on his bronchial tubes. He literally couldn't take a deep breath. God damn it, if he were a mature male, and given the way he handled things sometimes, that was seriously debatable, if not downright wrong. He would go out into the hallway, march over to Blay's room and knock on the door. He'd put his head inside, see for himself that the redhead had a heartbeat and was making sense, and then he'd go about his night. Instead, here he was, trying to pretend he was not thinking about the guy while he wore a path into his carpet. On that note, more with the walking. He would have rather gone to the weight room and had a run, but the fact that Blaylock was up here in this wing was like a tether that kept him stuck in the vicinity. Without a larger purpose to pull him away, like going out to fight or, say, the house being on fire, he was evidently incapable of breaking free. And when he found himself in front of the French doors again, he had an inkling why he kept stopping there. He tried to talk his palm out of hitting the handle. Didn't work. Pop went the latch, and slap went the cool air on his face. Stepping out in his bare feet and his bathrobe, he barely noticed the ice cube cold slate or the draft that shot up his legs and nailed him in the balls. Up ahead, Light streamed out from the double doors of Blaze's room, which was good news. Surely they'd close the curtains before they had sex. So it was probably safe to look in. Right? Besides, Blay was just coming off an injury, so they couldn't be going tilt-a-whirl in there. Revolving himself to the role of peeping Quinn, he stuck to the shadows and tried not to feel like a stalker as he tiptoed over. When he got next to the door, he braced himself, leaned in, and took a deep, relieved breath. Blay was alone on the bed, lying all propped up against the headboard, his black robe tied at the waist, his ankles crossed, his feet covered in black socks. His eyes were closed, and his hand rested just above his belly, as if he were carefully looking after what was probably still bandaged. Movement across the way brought Blay's lids up and took his eyes in the opposite direction of the windows. It was Layla, emerging from the bathroom, and she was walking slowly. The two exchanged some words. No doubt he was thanking her for the feeding he'd just had, and she was telling him that it was her pleasure. Not a surprise that she was here. She had been making the rounds of the house, and Quinn had already run into her shortly before first meal. Or what would have been first meal if anyone had shown. And as she left Blaze's room, Quinn waited for Saxton to come in. Naked, with a red rose between his teeth, and a motherfucking box of chocolates. And a hard-on that made the Washington Monument look stumpy. Nothing. Just Blay letting his head fall back and his lids drift down. He looked utterly exhausted and, for the first time, older. That was no recently out-of-transition boy over there. That was a full-blooded male. A stunningly beautiful, full-blooded male. In his mind, Quinn saw himself opening the door and stepping inside. Blay would look over and try to sit up, but Quinn would wave him down as he walked over. He would ask about the injury, and Blay would open up the robe to show him. Quinn would reach out and touch the bandage, and then he would let his fingers wander off the gauze and the surgical tape onto the warm, smooth skin of Blay's stomach. Blay would be shocked, but in this fantasy, he wouldn't push the hand away. He would take it lower, down past the injury, down onto his hips, and his... Fuck! Quinn leaped back, but it was too late. Saxton had somehow come into the room, walked over to the windows, and started to pull the drapery shut. And in the process, he'd seen the asswipe outside on the terrace, who was making like a security camera. As Quinn wheeled around and hot-footed it back for his room, he thought, "Don't open the door. Don't open the door. Quinn?" Busted. Freezing like a burglar caught with a plasma screen under his armpit, he made sure his robe was closed before he turned around. Shit. Saxton was stepping out, and the bastard was also in a robe. Well, he guessed they were all sporting them. Even Layla had been in one. As Quinn faced off at his cousin, he realized he hadn't said more than two words to the guy since Saxton had moved in. "I just wondered how he was." No reason to use a proper noun. Pretty damn obvi who he'd been staring at. "Blaylock's asleep at the moment." "He feed?" Even though Quinn already knew that. "Yes." Saxton shut the door behind himself, no doubt to keep the cold out. And Quinn tried to ignore the fact that the guy's feet and ankles were bare, because it meant that chances were good the rest of him was also. "Ah, sorry to have disturbed you," Quinn muttered. "Have a good night." You could have just knocked. From the hall inside. The words were spoken with an aristocratic inflection that made Quinn's skin tighten up all over. Not because he hated Saxton. It just reminded him too much of the family he'd lost. "I didn't want to bother you. Him. Either one of you." As a gust curled up against the house, Saxton's impossibly thick and wavy blonde hair didn't even ruffle.
as if every part of him, down to his follicles, was simply too composed and well-bred to be affected by anything. Quinn, you wouldn't be interrupting a thing. Liar, Quinn thought. You were here first, cousin, Saxton murmured. If you wished to see him, or be with him, I would leave you two alone. Quinn blinked. So, the pair of them had an open relationship? What the hell? Or wait, maybe he'd just done a masterful job in convincing not only Blay, but Saxton, that he didn't want his best friend or anything sexual. Cousin, may I speak candidly? Quinn cleared his throat. Depends on what you have to say. I'm his lover, cousin. Whoa. He put his hand up. That's none of my business. Not the love of his life. Quinn pulled another double blink. And then for a split second, he got sucked into some place where his cousin bowed out gracefully, and Quinn more than filled the SOB's chic shoes. Except whatever. There was a big-ass glitch in that fantasy. Blay was through with him. He'd engineered that result over too many years. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, cousin? Saxton kept his voice down, even though the wind was rolling and the door was closed. Do you hear me? Okay, this was not a corner Quinn had expected to come to tonight, or any other evening. Fucking hell, his body was suddenly tingling all over, and he had half a mind to tell his cousin to beat it and go wax his eyebrows or some shit, or better yet, move the hell out. Except then he thought about how old Blay looked. The guy had finally found a stride in his life, and it was criminally unfair for that to be negotiated away out here in the dark. Quinn shook his head. It's not right. Not for Blay. You are a fool. No, I used to be one. I would beg to differ. Saxton's elegant hand pulled the lapels of his robe closer together. If you'll excuse me, I'd best return to the interior. It's cold here on the outside. Well, wasn't that an ass-smacker of a metaphor? Don't tell him about this, Quinn said roughly. Please. Saxton's eyes narrowed. Your secret is all too well protected. Trust me. With that, he turned and went back into Blaylock's room, the door shutting with a click, and then the light getting cut off as those heavy drapes were tugged into place. Quinn rubbed his hair again. Part of him wanted to bust in and say, I changed my mind, cuz. Now get the fuck out of here so I can... tell Blay what he'd told Layla. But Blay might well be in love with Saxton, and God knew Quinn had fucked his best friend too many times. Or not, as the case was. When he eventually headed back to his room, only because it was just too damn pathetic to be out here staring at the ass sides of drapery, he realized his life had always been about him. What he wanted, needed, had to have. The old Quinn would have driven a bus through that opening. On a wince, he tried not to take that turn of phrase quite so literally. The thing was, though, the ridiculous pansy-ass saying was right. If you loved someone, you set them free. In his room, he went over and sat on the bed. Looking around, he saw furniture he hadn't bought, and decorations that were gorgeous, but anonymous and not to his style. The only things that were his were the clothes in the closet, the razor in the bathroom, and the running shoes he'd kicked off when he'd come back earlier. It was just like his parents' house. Well, here, people actually valued him. But as lives went, he didn't have one of his own, really. He was John's protector, the Brotherhood soldier, and... shit. Now that he wasn't indulging in his sex addiction anymore, that was the end of the list. Pushing himself back against the headboard, he crossed his feet at the ankles and arranged his robe. The night stretched out ahead of him
with a horrible flatness, like he'd been driving and driving and driving through the desert, and he had only nights more of the same up ahead. Months of the same. Years. He thought of Layla and the advice he'd given her. Man, the two of them were in the exact same place, weren't they? Closing his eyes, he was relieved when he started to drift, but he had a feeling any peacefulness he found wasn't going to last long. And he was right. Chapter 42. At Tri-County Equine Hospital, Manny stood while Glory snuffled around his scrubs, and he knew he should probably leave her. But he found that he was unable to separate himself or pain from the horse. Time was running out for his Glory, and it killed him. But he couldn't very well leave her to waste away, growing thinner and more crippled with each passing day. She deserved so much better than that. "You love her," Payne said softly, her pale hand skimming across the thoroughbred's back and going down onto the hip. "Yeah, I do. She is very lucky." No, she was dying, and that was a curse. He cleared his throat. "I guess we need to." "Dr. Manello?" Manny leaned back and looked over the stall door. "Oh, hey, Doc. How are you?" As the head vet strode down to them, his tuxedo was out of place as a pitchfork in an opera box. "I'm okay, and you're clearly looking well." The guy repositioned his bow tie. "The monkey suit is because I'm on my way home from the Met. I just had to stop and see your girl, though." Manny ducked out and offered his hand. "Me too." As they shook, the vet glanced into the stall, and his eyes popped when he saw Payne. "Ah, hello." When Payne offered the man a small smile, the good doctor blinked like the sun had broken through a cloud bank and shone down upon him. "Okay." Manny was so through with bastards staring at her like that. Putting himself in the way, he said, "Is there any kind of suspension we could get her into, to relieve some pressure? We've had her strapped for a couple of hours each day." As the vet replied, he inched to the side until Manny had to follow with his torso to keep blocking the view. "I don't want to run the risk of gastrointestinal or breathing problems." Bored with the tilting thing and wanting to spare Payne where the conversation was heading, Manny took the guy's arm and moved them off to the side. "What's our next step?" The vet rubbed his eyes as if to give his mind a second to unscramble. "To be honest, Dr. Manello, I don't have a good feeling about where we are. That other hoof is foundering, and although I've been doing everything I can to treat it, it's not responding. There has to be something else. I'm so damned sorry." "How long until we're sure?" "I'm sure now." The man's stare was positively grim. "That's why I came in tonight. I was hoping for a miracle." "Well, didn't that make two of them?" "Why don't I give you some time with her?" the vet said. "Take all you need." Which was doctor talk for "say your goodbyes." The vet put his hand on Manny's shoulder briefly, and then he turned and walked away. As he went, he looked in every single stall, checking his patients, patting a muzzle now and then. Good guy. Thorough guy. The kind who would exhaust every single avenue before laying down a stop-loss scenario. Manny took a deep breath and tried to tell himself that Glory was not a pet. People didn't have racehorses as pets, and she deserved better than suffering in a little stall while he worked up the courage to do right by her. Putting his hand to his chest, he rubbed his cross through his scrubs and had a sudden urge to go to church. At first, all he noticed was the shadows getting stronger on the wall across the way, and then he thought maybe someone had turned the overhead lights on. Finally, He realized that the illumination was coming out of Glory's stall. What the? Skidding around, he recoiled, and then had to catch his balance. Payne was on her knees in the fluffy sawdust, her hands on his horse's forelegs, her eyes closed, her brows tight, and her body glowing with a fierce and beautiful light. Above her, Glory was stock still, but her coat was twitching, and her eyes were rolling back in her head. Little chuffing whinnies rolled up her long neck and came out her flaring nostrils, as if she were overcome by a feeling of relief, an easing of pain. Those injured front legs of hers were softly aglow. Manny didn't move, didn't breathe, didn't blink. He just held his cross even harder and prayed that no one would interrupt this. He wasn't sure how long the three of them stayed as they were, but eventually it became obvious Payne was straining from the effort. Her body began to vibrate and she started to breathe unevenly. Manny broke into the stall and pulled her free from Glory, holding her lax body against his and moving her out of the way in case the horse spooked or did something unpredictable. Payne. Oh, God. Her eyes fluttered. Did I aid her? Manny stroked her hair back as he looked at his filly. Glory was standing in place, lifting one front hoof and then the other and then going back to the first as if she were trying to figure out what had caused the abrupt comfort. Then she shook herself and went over to nip at the hay that she hadn't touched. As that wonderful sound of a muzzle tip working at dry grass filled the silence, he looked back down at Payne. "You did," he said hoarsely. "I think you did." Her eyes seemed to struggle to focus. "I wished not for you to lose her." Overcome by a gratitude he didn't have enough words for, Manny curled her up closer to his heart and held her for a moment. He wanted to stay like that for so much longer, but she wasn't looking well, and Christ knew who else may have noticed the light show. He had to get them out of here. "Let's go to my place," he said, "so you can have a lie down." When she nodded, he swung her into his arms, and damn if she didn't feel perfect. As he shut the stall behind them, he glanced over at Glory. The horse was woofing back the hay like the stuff was going out of style. Holy shit. Had it really worked? "I'll be back tomorrow," he said to her, before he strode away, buoyed by an incandescent hope. Down at the security guard station, he smiled as he shrugged at the guy. "Someone's been pulling double shifts at the hospital. She's wiped." The man rose from his seat as if Payne's mere presence, even if she were out cold, was enough to get his attention. "Better get her home. You have to take care of a woman like that." "Too right. That's just where I'm headed." Moving quickly, he went out to reception and then waited for the buzz to sound so that he could push the final doors open. With any luck, the head vet hadn't seen a thing. "Thank you, Jesus," Manny muttered as he got his cue and shoved with his hip. He wasted no time going over to the car, although getting out his keys while keeping Payne off the ground was a scramble. So was opening her door. But then he put her in the passenger seat, all the while wondering if she was ill. Shit. He had no way of getting into contact with anyone from her world. Going around and sitting behind the wheel, he thought, fuck it. He was just going to drive her back to the vampires. "May I ask something of you?" she said in a slurred way. "Anything. What do you—" "May I take your vein for a moment? I find myself curiously depleted."
"Okay. Right. Talk about your Johnny on the spots." He locked them in and all but tore off his arm and threw it at her. Her soft lips found the inside of his wrist, but her bite was not swift, as if she were having trouble summoning the energy. Still, she got the job done and he jumped, the sharp pain nailing him in the heart and making him a little lightheaded. Or maybe that was just a function of the sudden, overwhelming arousal that shot just not through his balls and into his cock, but raced around his entire body. On a groan, his hips rolled in the Porsche's seat, and he let his head fall back. God, this felt good. The sucking rhythm she fell into might as well have been on his erection. And even though it should have hurt, the pull and swallow registered only as pleasure. A stinging, sweet pleasure that he was damned certain he would die for. He fell into a blissful state. It felt like centuries that they were linked with her fangs in his flesh. Time had no meaning, and neither did the reality that they were in a parking lot, in a car with clear windows. Fuck the world. It was only him and her together. And that was before her diamond eyes opened and looked up at him, locking not on his face, but his neck. Vampire, he thought. Beautiful vampire. Mine. As that thought coalesced in his mind, he acted on autopilot, shifting his head to the side, offering his jugular to her. He didn't have to ask twice. In a great surge, pain sprang up, all but launching her whole body onto him, her hand shoving into his hair and tightening on his nape. As she held him in her grip, he was utterly immobilized, hers for the taking, prey for the predator. And now that she had him, she moved slowly, her fangs dropping to his skin and dragging up the column of his throat, making him stiffen in anticipation of the puncturing and the sucking. Fuck, he barked when she bit him. Oh, yeah. His hands grabbed onto her shoulders, pulling her even closer. Take it all. Take, oh, God. Oh, shit. Something stroked his cock, and given that he knew exactly where his palms were, it had to be her. Shifting around, going straight up greedy, he gave her as much space to move as he could. And move she did, up and down against his straining erection, his hips helping her, countering the strokes. His breath was loud in the inside of the car as he panted, and so were his moans. It didn't take long at all until his balls went numb and the tip of his cock tightened up against the mounting pressure. I'm going to come, he groaned. You better stop if you don't want me to. At that, she popped the bow on the scrubs and burrowed inside. Manny saw motherfucking stars. The instant her skin was against his, he orgasmed like he'd never had one before, his head jacking back hard, his hands digging into her shoulders, his hips bucking like crazy. And she didn't stop the drinking or the pumping, so just as it had been before, he kept it up with the releasing, the pleasure ramping higher with every spasm through his erection. It ended way too soon. Then again, they could have kept at it for a decade and he would have remained starved for more. When pain pulled out of him, she eased back and licked her way around the sharp points of her fangs, her tongue pink against the white. Man, that gorgeous glow was back underneath her skin, making her seem like a dream. Oh, wait. She was one, wasn't she? Your blood is strong, she said in a husky way as she bent to him again and licked her way up his throat. So very strong. Is it? He mumbled. And then he wasn't sure whether he'd even spoken. Maybe he'd just thought the words. I can feel the power cursing through me. Man, he'd never been into the SUVs before. The damn things were too clunky and drove like boulders falling down a mountainside. But what he wouldn't have given for a back seat that you could fit more than a set of golf clubs in. He wanted to lay her out and... I want more of you. Payne murmured as she nuzzled him. Well, he was still hard as stone, even though he'd... I want you in my mouth. Manny's head kicked back and he groaned as his cock twitched like it was taking a jog down there. But as much as he wanted her, he wasn't sure she knew what she was in for.
even the thought of her lips on his. Payne's head went down into his lap before he could find the breath to speak, and there was no preamble. She sucked him right down, pulling him in and holding him in her wet, warm mouth. Fuck, Payne. His hands went to her shoulders, ostensibly to pull her back, but she was having none of that. Without coaching, she knew just how to rock him, pulling up and sucking down before licking under his shaft, and then she explored him with a thoroughness that told him she was enjoying it as much as he was, and wasn't that a turn-on? Except then he felt her fangs teasing around his head. He jacked her up fast on that one, capturing her mouth in a hard kiss while he held on to her face and started to lose it all over her hands. But that didn't last. She jerked up out of his palms and went back to where she'd been, catching him in mid-orgasm, lapping up what his body seemed to have in spades for her. When the kicking spasms stopped, she pulled back, looked at him, and slowly licked her lips. Manny had to close his lids at that, his erection pulsing to the point of pain. "You are taking me to your home now," she growled. Not a request from her, and the tone suggested that she was thinking exactly as he was. So that was going to lead to one and only one thing. Manny gathered himself from the inside out and then opened his eyes. Reaching up, he touched her face and then rubbed her lower lip with his thumb. "I'm not sure we should, Bambina," he said roughly. Her hand tightened on his cock, and he moaned. "Manuel, I think that is very much where we need to be. Not a good idea." She pulled back farther and retracted her hand, her glow fading. "But you are aroused, even now." "You think?" "And that's my point." His eyes raked over her face and went to her breasts. He was so desperate for her. He was tempted to rip her scrubs in half and take her virginity in his car. "I'm not going to be able to hold back, Payne. I'm barely doing that now." She purred in satisfaction and licked those red lips again. "I like when you lose control." Oh, God, that was so not helping. He shook his head, thinking this was pure fucking hell. Denying them both hurt that badly. "I think you need to do what you have to and leave me now, while I can still let you go." The knocking sound on the window made no sense at first. It was just the two of them in the empty parking lot. But then the mystery was solved. "Get out of the car, and give me your grip." The male voice snapped Manny's head around to the window, where he stared into the barrel of a gun. "You heard me, man. Out of the car or I'll shoot you." As Manny moved Payne back into her seat and away from the point-blank range, he softly said to her, "When I get out, lock the doors. It's right here." He moved his hand over to the dash and tapped the button. "Just let me handle this." He had about $400 in cash in his wallet and plenty of credit cards. "Stay inside." "Manuel." He didn't give her a chance to respond. As far as he was concerned, that gun held all the answers and made all the rules. Snagging his wallet, he was slow in opening the door, but quick about his up and out. And when he shut Payne in, he waited to hear the locks go down. And waited. Desperate to hear the punching sound of Payne getting as safe as she could, he only half heard the guy in the ski mask bark, "Your wallet! And tell the bitch to get out of the car! There's 400. The wallet disappeared. "Tell her to get out or she comes with me. And the watch. I want the watch." Manny glanced over to the building. There were windows everywhere. And surely that guard had to take a wander to check shit out from time to time. Maybe if he went slow with the handover. That gun muzzle pushed right up into his face. "Watch. Now." It wasn't his good one. He didn't operate with his Piaget on, for Christ's sakes. But whatever. Asshole could have the fucking thing. Plus, as he feigned hands that shook, He figured it would eat up. Hard to say what happened in what order. In retrospect, he knew that Payne had to have opened her door first, but it seemed like the instant he heard the horrific sound of the passenger side getting cracked, she was behind the robber. And another bizarre thing was that it wasn't until Manny cursed that the bastard seemed to realize a third